creates of sort, that people will go out of their ways to find the kind of stories that will appeal to South Africans.
Ms. Green, thank you very much. You are not going to be appointed onto this board because this has been the longest interview. We're going to punish you for that. Thank you very much for your time. Can we call in the next person? I think it's Professor Gumede. No, it's Professor Gumede. Professor Gumede, welcome to the Committee on Communications. You've been to Parliament before? Yes. Sorry to keep you waiting. We try our best to keep to the time limit, but sometimes these members are ungovernable and they want to ask many questions. So welcome to you. We're going to give you 3 to 5 minutes to just take us through your CV, highlights of your career, and why you think you'll be a worthy candidate to serve on the SABC board. And then we open it up to the members for questions, and you respond to each question. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is William Gumede, and I'm currently an associate professor at Fitch University, teaching public management. And I'm also involved in the Centre at the University of London as the program director of a centre called the Africa Asia Centre, the School of Oriental and African Studies. I used to be a journalist, and I started off in the alternative press, in student press, and in trade union press, working for COSATU before, working in student movements, editing some student and youth publications, and also was then involved also at the Sowetan newspaper, which I was the deputy editor of the Sowetan, and was involved in repositioning the newspaper in the mid-90s, newspapers like the Sowetan as a traditionally a newspaper focus on during the 1980s, a newspaper that focused on a particular constituency. And then from the mid-1990s onwards, after 1994, suddenly, the media environment in South Africa had opened up, and traditional readers of the Sowetan and moved on could then buy, for example, Business Day, they could buy the Star. And then the dilemma in the mid-1990s was for a publication like the Sowetan was, what do you do now? You have declining readerships, not only declining readerships, but you also have technological changes. How do you reposition yourself? And it's also a new era where the newspaper started off in the 1960s, 1970s, as the anti-apartheid newspaper, and we're now in a democracy. How do you reposition a newspaper or a media organization in the context of a democracy? Well, at the same time, we mustn't forget that newspapers and media houses are also commercial enterprises, so you have to also at the end of the day make some money. And also, at the same time, also you have to change the technical capacity, technological changes in the media are very, very crucial. So when you do these kind of transformations, changing technology is one of those
Thank you very much. Ms. Delal, C.K. Magazi, General Vilamisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see, Mr. Gumede, that many moons ago you were a golf caddy.
Yes,
as you now, are you playing golf now or are you still a caddy?
Yeah, I haven't overcome that yet, sir. You know, the difficulty when you start up with a golf caddy is a certain milieu, a certain sort of thing. I haven't yet picked up the caddy flag to start playing. So I haven't moved from being a golf caddy.
Yeah.
During the era of the 1980s and 1970s.
That's just on a
lighter note.
Chairperson, my question to Mr. Gumede is that, you know, obviously we're all trying to get the SABC back to be a public broadcaster. We all know there are many problems, but certainly we're looking at finding solutions to those problems. If you are appointed to the board, what kind of value will you bring to the board in terms of finding solutions to some of the problems that we face in the SABC board?
I think I have to say, you know, my diagnosis of the SABC is at 3 or 4 levels. I think the first level is a governance problem. It's number one. The second level is a technical capacity problem. You know, journalism has changed, and it's a tough environment if you're going to be, you know, media organizations, it's a tough economic environment. So in that context, there has been a deficit. And there's also, you know, in my context, there's also been a problem of no clarity about what does it mean to be a public broadcaster in the context of a democracy and the kind of democracy that we have. So literally, a governance problem, a skills problem, a technology problem, and a problem of defining itself as a public broadcaster in the context of a democracy. So what I can bring to my background spans both as a journalist itself, as a manager within a journalistic environment, and also as a teacher of journalists, not only of journalists, but of civil servants, you know, of somebody who's been teaching the ideas of what it means to public service in the context of a democracy. I mean, you know, and also it is now also, I think, you know, the other challenge in addition to those challenges for SABC is also now, you know, the impact of the global financial crisis. You know, what it will do is, and sad to say, you know, some, just generally in media, some of the media houses in this country is going to close down because they're very, very tough. Advertising, a whole other range of things is going to be very, very tough. So in terms of doing tough situations, what matters very much is at least competency, skills level. So that we have the best managers, that we have the best board that can give the guidance, and that you run a tight ship in terms of management. That is how one survives as an organization, whether you're a media house, whether you're a pandemic institution, whether you're a business or a company, whether you're a government department. You get your skills right. Whether it is the skills, you know, your technical skills in the workplace, but you also get your board skills right, because that is where you want to get clear leadership and you want to have a balance on the board of and so on. And also you define your role better. You know, it's no point the SABC is going to muddle along. So there has to be a definition of what is the role of a public broadcaster in a democracy. And then secondly, in this new circumstances of tough economic conditions, what do you do now in terms of you have to relook. How do you do things? Because there's not going to be easy money from government. Yes, as a public broadcaster, I believe you have to get money from, from the public purse, the idea of public broadcasting. But you're not going to, in these new circumstances, no public broadcaster can expect to get the kind of money that maybe, before the financial crisis, it was possible. And so one has to relook actually how one does one's business.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Professor William Gumede, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I'm fine. Professor, I just want you to share with us on the 28th and 29th of January 2009, you attended the workshop which was organized by SOS Kwaludin. You did a presentation in that workshop. Would you share your presentation in that workshop, a copy of your presentation to this committee? And the second question, how would you react if we, as this panel, because we are also committed in terms of establishing, you know, a good, a broad, to have a good, a board of people with integrity that can manage the SABC. And as this panel, we also want to have people who have never sit in the SABC board. That, in other words, people who are new. We don't want to have people that have past baggage to come in the SABC. And what will be your reaction to that statement?
I think the first thing to address, thank you for the question, what I talked about the January meeting was the role of a public broadcaster in a democracy. And my argument was that the role of the media and the public broadcaster in a democracy is it depends on the kind of democracy. And in our case, what we have is we have a representative democracy and a participatory democracy. And that is what the role it is. So it does then, it puts special demands on the media organization, especially on the public broadcaster, in the context of promoting participatory democracy and promoting representative democracy. But we also, part of our democracy is also the constitutional democracy. So that brings in extra demands. And then part of this constitutional democracy is also in the sense that it, you know, the Constitution makes a case also for social justice and equality. So, you know, if the media has a role to play in that kind of context. Now, if we talk about social justice and we talk about equality, maybe talk about also bringing in the views also of the poor, those marginalized. But not only just bringing in the view, but giving the quality information to them, quality information that they can make decisions and participate in a democracy. But I think for me, it's also the other key important thing is also reflect the poor and the marginal also in the media. And it is important. It's not just giving them access to information, but they are also there. They are part. So a reflection of themselves in the media for me is a very, very important part of it. But the other important part for me is the role of the SABC in particular about building a democratic political culture. I mean, you know, what we want to do in terms of our constitution, we want, the constitution is, you know, put some ideals of, you know, and a democratic political culture for me is the way we do things, our everyday life, whether we elected officials or whether it's just ordinary citizens. And there's values of our constitutions which we must defend. And that is, to me, also where the SABC comes in, is, you know, in building a democratic culture. So democratic culture is not just because, and I think what people forget, often the mistake they make is that, yes, we've now put a model constitution, and yes, we've got your perfect institutions on paper. But, you know, the hard work is turning that sort of thing into reality, into the everyday behavior whether whether it's a politician or whether one is an ordinary citizen or a community member, and so on. And that is, you know, democratic culture, where the SABC for me plays a very, very important role. But I think for me that's a different, it's a new, another alternative important role in the democratic context of the SABC. In the context of identity and South Africanness, you know, we don't have the luxury in South Africa is, you know, as we build a nation, we don't have the luxury maybe from elsewhere where we're all the same, where we all speak the same language, and so on, and we all come from the same kind of background. We don't have that. So what we have to build our society and our nation will have to be a political construct. So the identity of South Africanness in our case is going to be a political construct. A political construct, and how do you build a political construct? So it's not on sad language and those sort of things, but as a political construct. So it means the SABC, for me, stands as those institutions. So as a political construct, there's going to be some institutions that's going to be, that has to be bipartisan, it's going to be where we can reflect ourselves in, you know, whether it is Parliament here, as an institution that everybody can identify themselves with as a South African, as a certain kind of doing of things. And for me, it's also the SABC is one of those institutions. So what it then means is, if we talk about it that way, the SABC, it means a totally different thing. It then means also that the SABC will have to then reflect, you know, it has to be an independent that people can identify with. I mean, if it's not going to be an independent organization, then, in terms of nation building and people associating themselves with the SABC, that's not going to be possible at all. So for me, you know, as a best kind of institution, as an institution that can build a South Africanness and people can identify yourself, and so on. So that, for me, is a very, very important part of it. And that is also, in the talk in January that I talked about.
Oh.
In your article,
26
April, 2009.
Oh, no, I didn't. Please repeat the question.
Do you still view President Zuma's mandate as a poison salad? That was in your article, 26.
Maybe I have to explain what I
April
meant.
2009.
I'm sorry. You know, for me, what is in terms of, I think everybody's mandate is a poison. In the end of the day, it's a poison chalice. You know, whether you Jacob Zuma, whether you Thabo Mbeki, whether you Mandela, there's a poison chalice. Because, you know, what you have to do is, you have to, and especially in our context in South Africa, of course you are elected by a constituency. But once you're there, once you're elected, you also have a broader constituency. Outside that narrow constituency that elected you. That constituency that elected you or individual in this now in the South African context, may be the majority constituency, but in terms of South Africanness, at the end of the day, one has to be inclusive. As I say, you know, our identity as South African is a political construct. So whatever we do, it is, you know, we have to re-emphasize that, because we're not going to build an inclusivity on other things, but on a political thing. So even on, I think for me, it's in terms of the poison chalice, is if you're a leader, a political leader, and you've been elected in the South African context, that, you know, we go beyond that narrow constituency or the majority constituency that elected to a broader South Africanness. Because even the presidency itself in our context is like the SABC, I think, is one of those institutions that can hold the country together. And so even if you elected or was elected just on one small part of the constituency, you know, the presidency, the institutions that hold the country together, that people can reflect themselves, one has to do that. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to build a South Africanness.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Kumete, good morning. My personal observation is that you should continue to display your political independence and inform South Africans about the situation in the country. My question will center around the editor-in-chief of a public broadcaster. With regards to the powers of the editor-in-chief, what guidelines should be used in your own opinion? Do you believe that the editor-in-chief simply has a unilateral say-so, which may never be questioned even when there is apparent bias?
You know, I will start off to say, I mean, you know, as I started off, there's a problem was, one of the problems of the SABC is a governance problem also. And the other problem was, is problem is, you know, professionalism, journalistic professionalism. Now, how do one deal then? And if one then look at the chief executive, group chief executive of the SABC, I think the very, very the important thing here for me, learning the lessons from the SABC, is to build a firewall between the group executive and the news editor. You know, the news editor of the institution. Build a firewall between the two. Because once you configure those roles, and then I think it, to me, is one of the reasons why the crisis in the SABC is where you have, you know, when news purely professional decisions are then can then be manipulated, and the biases can be, you know, political manipulation or any other kind of even commercial manipulation and so on. So that, you know, so there has to be a way that one builds a firewall between, so you know that you circle the news division and the news editor and so on too, in order to create that that kind of professionalism. And for me, also a key part of that, when you build a firewall, would also be to you know, in this context of it, because there's also a financial crisis at the SABC. It's a crisis also, not just a financial crisis because of the global financial crisis and tough economic conditions, but also just a wasted mismanagement of things. So what you now need to do is you need to, going forward, focus on how do you get it right, how do you get financial management right, and how do you get editorial, professionalism, editorial professionalism. So you build a firewall between the, you know, the news division and the management, the CEO. But what you also then need to do is also is how do you get the CEO, the group CEO, to focus on financial accounting as a very, very key component. But it, to get a triangle right, one has to, the board now has to do the oversight role properly. So if one gives them, the news division, the chance to do a good professional job, make the right appointments you know, professional capacity, serve the group executive job, and also bring some financial accountability and oversight there, and also bring the other oversight mechanisms in. Because, you know, all of these things are going to be empty unless one brings in also oversight, you know, oversight would be also, you know, regulatory institutions like ICASA playing a much more, you know, bigger role. This committee, portfolio committee, you know, a much more activist role in terms of monitoring and evaluation and so on. I mean, you know, I would also look at the SABC, you know, the broader, it's not just that the SABC on its own is dysfunctional. I think there's a broader dysfunctional across, you know, the public sector. And the SABC is, you know, the symptoms of the SABC, you can get it all over. And the first thing is regulation is not working. You know, or it's not working properly. You know, oversight institutions are just not doing their jobs and so on. And, I mean, where it is, you know, things like, you know, your outside regulatory institutions, but it also things like the boards. For me, it's a crucial aspect because not only is the SABC, you know, it's a malaise that goes over other states. Or state-related institutions, but also the executive center, you know, oversight is just sort of thing that people don't seem to, or institutions don't seem to get right. I mean, in terms of the board, I mean, also a way forward, I mean, in other countries, for example, I mean, they've used a concept of, to deal with this issue about how do you get oversight between the boards and the institution itself, just in terms of, you know, the part of status or state-owned or related institutions. You know, some countries even have set up office of the commissioner of public and, you know, public appointments, for example, where you take the politics out of the public appointments of boards and you put it aside and you appoint, whether it is through parliament and so on, a special committee, standing committee, actually, and make the appointment of boards of institutions like the SABC, for example, or institutions like the South African Airways, and so on, you know, as a concept going forward, because we really have to think not only about the SABC, we have to think about how do you get this oversight right, because it's clearly a failure in our democracy. We've got the right institutions, we've got it, but, you know, in terms of the implementation, it doesn't seem to be, we don't seem to get it right, and so on.
First of all, just a quick question. Are you aligned to any political party? And if so, do you hold any executive position? Secondly, you spoke of the skills requirements of such an organization. You also said that the organization should define its role better. I suppose one should go back to the book again. What is the SABC? What does it mean to be the legislation, etc.? Can you please just give us your idea of that? And then lastly, some questions were posed a little earlier which questioned the need for a broadcaster that is really sort of based on the fundamental principles of our democracy. I just want to ask you, if you look at the editorial code of the SABC as well as the charter, it relies very heavily on the preamble of the constitution, of the type of democracy that we establish, etc. So how fiercely would you defend independent editorial sort of office? You refer to the stonewalling. What did you say?
Firewalling.
Firewalling of the newsroom, etc. Is that in your regard? Could you just elaborate further on that? A very critical component to make sure, because remember, we come from a background where we have a serious problem with the credibility of the institution, which must be corrected. Thank you.
I think in terms of political parties, you know, I'm independent as you. Of course, we all have sympathies, and being in our country, where we come from, you are part of the liberation struggle, and those sort of sympathies. But for me, it's very, very important that, you know, that there is at least some semblance of independence, you know, reasonable independence. Of course, you know, there's no perfect independence. It can never be because we have all a few. But at least if there's a bias, that the bias goes towards the constitution and towards democracy. That is the bias at the end of the day. And if that is the loyalty that we, at the end of the day, if there is a loyalty towards something. I mean, for me, I'll start at the, you know, on the last question. You know, I'll make that argument in terms of that we base the SABC, you know, it's a public broadcaster, we base it on its role very much entrenched in the democracy and on the constitution, defending the constitution. You know, that is, to me, it's not going to be easy, of course. It's these sort of things are complex, it's messy, but that is the ideal that you work towards and to defend it. So, you know, I'll start off with that sort of thing, and that we may relook and revise and so on, but that the ultimate, at the end of the day, I mean, when we don't know where we're going, that at the end of the day, it's the constitution that we look at, and the kind of democracy that we want to build there, that we look at the role, and that should, you know, define the role in the context of a vacuum, and so on. Now, the thing is, going forward for the SABC, it has to regain its credibility. And for me, it's also, I mean, you might can take the analogy, I mean, in a economic crisis, in a general financial crisis. If you look at, I think, at the institutions that survive the crisis and will survive the crisis, whether you can put it in terms of countries, whether you can put it in terms of organizations or companies, are those who are credible, I think. It's a very important part of it. You know, when you have, in moments like where we are in now, if those organizations are credible, individuals leading these organizations are credible, you know, these are the organizations that survive this, because this is a tough economic moment that we're moving in, and the SABC starts off with a baggage. You know, it doesn't have the credibility. It has to be rebuilt. So, lack of credibility, I think, will also hit the ANC's, the SABC's pockets. Flips there.
You see, Professor, you've just lost the job now.
I know.
I almost going to say yes, but now I think it's over.
Oh, now it is over. I think I can find my own. Absolutely. I'll try to go back. if you know, lack of credibility will hit the FEDC's financial pockets also. I mean, you know, in terms of if it's in a competition then for things like advertising. You know, if the FEDC is not credible, who's going to invest when the advertising is scarce? And people have to make these tough decisions about, am I going to, you know, got a limited budget, you should advertise, are you going to go to the SABC or are you going to go elsewhere else? And here is your institution that's not credible. And so on. If you don't have good programs, quality programs, because that's the other part also, there's a professional deficit there, credibility in terms of quality programming at SABC. If you know, I mean, you know, the media landscape has changed dramatically. Is the SABC is not the only game in town anymore. You know, media has changed. You have blogs now. You have internet. You know, these are all competition. You know, you have, you know, all these different kinds of platforms. We're going into the digital mode. You know, so if you advertise as a company and you want to advertise, you suddenly have so many choices. And if you have a limited budget also, you know, these are the factors you get to think about. So, you know, for the SABC, just, you know, I won't even put it as survival, just going forward. You know, it has to restore credibility in its governance, and it has to restore credibility in its professional operations, you know, just financially to make it work. Because, as I say, I mean, as you know also, there's not going to be unlimited money from government into the SABC. Government also has to, central government has to make the choices, limited budget, limited revenue, where do we put the money? SABC will also have to say, you know, is it doing anything to, you know, to give government the opportunity to give them the money? Now, the last part of the question about defining its role in the global, or just defining its public. So I think for me, it is not easy in this where we are now to be, you know, to define what is the public service, you know, in terms of what is public broadcasting, because this is a difficult period, but so it's not going to be easy, but it's a job that has to be done. And the SABC will have to look at it. And as I say, for me, it is, you know, what we define is a service. I mean, you know, what is the context of our country? What is the context of our democracy? And that is where we have to localize what is a public service broadcaster. But in our context, I mean, we have huge, levels of illiteracy. So it means in terms of a public service role of the SABC, number one, it is enlightenment to people who won't have ordinary access to education, to what's happening out in the broader world. It's a very, very important part of it. You know, in this context where we now also have, you know, it is, you know, the world as we know it, you know, has changed. It's confusing. You know, financial crisis, you know, what we looked at, values, you know, it's a confusing world. In that confusing world, what we need from the SABC is quality information to make the right decisions, not only for government, but for ordinary South Africans. I mean, you know, who would have thought a year ago that, you know, the state would bail out banks in the U.S. You know, so, you know, our own, you know, things that we perceived as truths are not truths, that's more anymore. So how do you then make decisions? You have to make decisions where your quality of information is key to go forward. It's key. To redefine a public service, it would be a public service role within the context of a democracy, what we want in terms of our democracy, and also within the context of, you know, our own contextual problems in the country, and so on. One of the things, for example, I mean, for a democracy really to work is, unless people have quality information, they cannot make decisions. I mean, they cannot judge the government without knowing exactly what this government is doing. And if the media is not doing that job of actually showing to people what is happening, or giving them the quality information, at least they can make judgment calls. So that's a very important part then of the public service role within our context.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Professor Clement. You've answered a couple of the questions that I wanted to ask already. Julie touched on the question of skills. You mentioned that one of the major challenges the SABC is facing is a skills crisis. Can you more specifically define that skills crisis and what areas and what do you think can be done to address this, particularly from the point of view of a board member, a prospective board member? And then you've defined more or less what you think the public broadcaster is in a democracy. Why do you want to serve on the SABC board? What do you think you can bring to this board that is sorely lacking? You understand very clearly the crisis that faces the SABC, but what is your understanding of what you as a board member can do to alleviate these problems? And then how do you define the independence of the SABC? I mean, I think independence is one of those things that people talk very casually about, but we rarely get an insight into whom people believe the SABC needs to be independent from. So if you can, could you just define that a little bit more specifically for us? And then you spoke earlier about this idea of an editorial firewall. I assume you're suggesting that the CEO shouldn't also be the editor-in-chief, that those two roles should be divorced. How then do you imagine this firewall can be protected, held together? How do you think the board can play a role in protecting and maintaining that firewall around the news? Thank you.
I think I'm going to start off with the skills level. You know, I think the first thing is, I mean, you know, just as a journalist, just reporting the complexities of a democracy demands a certain kind of skill. You know, to start off, you know, it's very, very basic. I mean, just to cover, for example, you know, a committee like this, it's a certain kind of skills you need as a journalist. And so on. To report in our kind of complexities as a society, you know, you need certain kind of skills. And also now, you know, to report, if the SABC is also going to play a role not only in South Africa, but also play a role or wanting to play a role also outside South Africa, it is also, you know, to reflect what's happening in the world. Also, you need a certain kind of skills to reflect. But as I was also saying, you know, before that, it is also, you know, technological changes and more changes to come also demand certain kind of skills, you know, which may be different kind of skills that we have before. And so it's a broad range of skills. And also, I mean, being journalists also now when it's very, very tough economically to operate, because, you know, I don't want to, I think I can't overemphasize, you know, the issue of how tough it is economically and how it will impact on the media. So, you know, that I even think that journalism itself may change. I mean, ideally, it should have been, you know, in moments of crisis, you know, should be the ideal time for journalism. So that is, you know, the role of journalism. That is, you know, where it is, you know, the recession, you know, the Great Depression, or you know, moments of uncertainty, you know, and so on. But in our context, where you have to cut costs, it means then a different sort of thing. So that will have to be a focus to tell the local story, to tell a complex. A country story, and it tells a complex world story. And also, you know, not only their kind of skills, but for me, it's also, you know, good management skills, you know, to manage the broadcaster, to, you know, to manage the organization. So clearly there has been a management problem before. So, you know, we have to focus on it going forward, you know, get better management skills to manage this sort of thing. And also, you know, technical, better technical skills and so on. And going on to the governance point of view, on your question on governance in terms of the board, I think, you know, the previous board really let down the SABC before. And, you know, and unless, you know, the SABC now has, I think the opportunity is now and during this difficult time going ahead that, you know, that there is a board that can do, you know, the management, not only the oversight, but also can give leadership, but also a board that will also bring some of the other kind of skills, management skills also. They can bring management skills also, you know, in addition to the management skills at the SABC and new management skills. In terms of independence, I mean, independent is not only, but independent is it's not only just, you know, from political interference, but it's also independent of commercial interference. So, you know, that is the balance to me, you know, that kind of. But also to me is also in terms of, you know, integrity also, professionalism. It's a key a component, you know. So, you know, this the debate around independence is a much more broad and a much more complex than just you know the argument about just political independence.
Thank you.
Sorry, I had the question about the firewall. What can the board do?
You know, in order to deal with this problem of professionalism, you know, you know, getting the quality programs, you know, getting a much more professional journalistic corps, you know, there has to be some kind of, you know, looking at, you know, journalism there, allowing journalists there to do their job and do a job well done. And that is why I, you know, want to make a very, very strong argument of having a firewall between, you know, the news division and, you know, the group executive. And also where, and maybe back on the independence, where you, the SABC now, a board that will defend editorial excellence. So defend, and I think that's a very important part, defend it, but also a board that will protect against interference from outside, whether it's business interference, commercial interference, or political interference. You have to, SABC will have to have a confident board. The board is confident. And I think that is also the problem often. So if you don't get right in the corporate structure right, in our context, not only the SABC, but in other state-owned institutions, you get a board, you know, that doesn't have the confidence, doesn't have the technical capacity, so you can't even offer if there's problems. I mean, you know, what's the point of having a board? There's problems at the SABC, but it doesn't have the management capacity to help out because it doesn't have the skills. Or it doesn't have the confidence to protect, you know, the journalists, component of the SABC if they're under, you know, if there's political interference because they're just not confident enough and so on. So, you know, so the how crucial that element, yeah, this board, this new board, would be, you know, to protect independence. And by protecting independence, we'll be supporting editorial quality, supporting, you know, making those judgment calls and, you know, giving support to the editorial division.
Advocate Langer and Mr. Kolwane.
Just one issue, Professor. Obviously, your day job, as you've explained it, is a professor, researcher. But as the Honorable Lamisa also pointed out, you've positioned yourself also to be, he calls it an independent commentator. I'll call it a public commentator. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. You're fully entitled to do that. You're fully entitled to get involved in political contestation. And I use political in the small sense. I don't want to in any way impugn what you do. But the fact of the matter is you position yourself to become part of the political discourse in the country. Whether for one side or the other doesn't matter. That is how people would perceive it. I would listen to you. I would say, oh, I really like what that man's saying. He's a great fellow. I wish he'd become a politician. Someone else would listen to you and say, hey, what a fool. Can't listen to that fellow. So by becoming involved in political contestation like you do, and you're fully entitled to, it does put you in a certain position, a controversial one, all the time. Because if you continue doing that, we will listen to you. Some will like it, some won't like it. And you become part of that discourse, as the Honorable Lamisa said, you must continue to do so. And I would also encourage commentators to continue to do so. My worry about that is you're fully entitled to do that, and we need people like that. My problem is the compatibility of a person doing that with serving on the SABC board. Because every time you go to the board from your day job, all your controversies, positive or negative, you take with you, and the board has to sit with them. They sit with Gumede there, and Gumede has said X, Y, and Z about this party, the UDM, about the COPE, etc., etc. And those issues get, and people, as they see you, perceive you to be something, whatever that may be. Now, that is what I want you to answer me. You see, we clearly don't allow certain people to serve on boards like this. Politicians mustn't be there, because they can promote one way or other. People, in my view, that are engaging political contestation, clearly are going to create more problems on the board than anything else for us. Every time, and you know, one of the things my observations have shown is it becomes a very personal little cesspool, these boards, of who you like, who's in, who's out. Now, when you bring in a personality who publicly expresses views all the time, I have big problems with that. Not with you doing it, you're fully entitled, but what that will mean for a board that is factious, problematic, and usually falls into factionalism. And I think in all fairness, you're going to have to answer that question for us, because it's going to be very difficult to otherwise, with all the other good qualities you may or may not have, to deal with that issue if it hasn't been properly aired and discussed, and to convince at least me, at the very least, why either you have to be one. You can't be fish and fowl. You have to be one or the other. And I would like your comment on that, sir. Thank
you. I think for me, I mean, you know, they started off, they say the role of the SABC in the democracy is to build a democratic culture. And unless we have a democratic culture in the country, you know, what we have, our institutions, our constitution, all of these routines are paper. And a part of the democratic culture is the idea of constructive criticism. So that if you or if an individual criticizes constructively, that it is not seen as controversial. So, and I think sadly we're not there in the country. If we, you know, this whole concept of democratic culture is the idea that you can criticize, but it is not seen as controversial. Of course, you know, there's criticism and there's criticism, and so on. And I think for me, it's even more crucial in the sense of the SABC, you know, for what it represents. Because, you know, unless we have, you know, and the environment and that allows critical voices, unless we have that, even ordinary policies, you know, just in terms of coming up with better policies, unless we have the opportunity of people actually criticizing a policy to make it better. So if nobody criticizes a policy, what kind of policies will we get at the end of the day? At the end of the day, a policy will go down to Parliament because nobody's criticized it, because constructive criticism is seen as controversial. It means the policy that comes out of Parliament at the end of the day will be poor policies, which have to be rewritten, and going to be challenged and those sort of things. So for me, a very, very important part of, you know, that the SABC, actually on the SABC board, that there is a diversity. It, for me, it's going to be very, very important. I mean, if we're all going to be just, you know, pliant, those sort of things, there is a balance. Of course, it's a balance that we want to have to get right. And getting the balance right is tough. Having a pluralistic balance right, but getting the SABC, it's crucial part that the SABC plays a role where constructive criticism is seen, you know, as enriching the democracy, but not, say, you know, not as controversial. So at the end of the day, sadly, almost, you know, unless we build a democratic culture in a way that allows dissent and sees dissent as building and not breaking down, unless we get there, our democracy is not going to become the quality democracy that we want. Basic things, our policies that we want to get, if we want to get better policies to serve our people, we're not going to get it if people are going to be quiet because they're going to be fearful of being controversial. I don't think it's going to happen that way.
Well, I obviously expressed myself very badly, Professor. I really apologize for expressing myself so badly. I obviously didn't make clear what I mean. Because all the things you say, I've got no problem with. I've said to you, whether I like what you say or not, I will definitely defend your right to do what you're doing. And I think we need people to do that. We need people to get involved in policy, all those issues. That's not the question I've asked. That's what I'm saying. I really am sorry I expressed it so badly. What I'm asking you is a person that sees himself or herself as a public commentator and making comment and getting involved in political contestation of policies, of political issues, whatever. Whether a person like that, putting them on a fragile board where all these interests are involved, and trying to create, when you bring all those public issues with you every time you go onto the board, you may have the most noble ideas in the world and the most noble intentions. You know that Dick, Tom, and Harry and Sally that are sitting outside perceive you in a certain way, either as good for this or bad for that. That is what I'm asking you, to put people like that on the board, that have a public profile where they regularly politically contest ideas and issues. That is the kind of person I'm asking, should we put people like that on the board and why? Because it brings all the problems and it heightens all the difficulties. So I really am sorry I didn't express myself well. Maybe I can give you another chance to just answer that part.
Let me also have... You see, the SABC and the public broadcaster is an arena of political contestation. Now, as a political scholar, not a politician, as a political scholar or academic, you are a political player in the public discourse. In an arena of political contestation, this independence that you might be calling for, this neutrality that you might be calling for, will it be compromised? That's the question. And then if you're serving on the board of that institution and you're a public player, how do you reconcile that? Because you made a very strong case for political neutrality, for independence, democratic culture. But if you are a player and you sit in a governance structure, then I think we might be having a problem.
I think maybe just to clarify, for me, I'm not a political...
I feel I'm a little bit uncomfortable on this line of questioning.
Yes. No, on a point of order.
If
you can't do this,
Johnny, let him just express his views.
If, for instance, Mr. Kumede was known to be this political commentator who is biased only promoting one political party. I would accept that. But if he gives commentary in general about the state of the nation, attack opposition parties when it is relevant, attack ruling party, why would you be worried about that?
You be worried about
Putin? No, let's do that.
Are you worried?
Yeah, no. Let the professor answer.
Yes, let him answer for himself.
I think maybe the first thing to say is that, you know, the first important part is that I'm not an elected official. I think that's, we have to put that aside. And I think secondly also, I don't see myself as a political player. I think, you know, what we need is, and for me it's crucial, that we do need to get that researchers do interact and bring out information, and it's very, very crucial. This, you know, whether it at the end of the day, I mean, it would be sad at the end of the day when one see, you know, bringing out information then as, you know, as controversial. So on. For me, it would be the big, you know, the most important thing for me is as long as the contest happens, I think, you know, in defending our institutions, our democratic institutions. Maybe that's for me the most crucial thing. If it's really one is going to be controversial, fine. If it's seen as controversial, but controversial, not for the sake of it, but for the sake of defending the ideals of the Constitution, for me that's the key part. For defending, you know, the institutions and a certain kind of idealism that we want. What do we want to build a society? How do we defend that? Now, if that becomes controversial, you know, that's a controversial, then I can live with it. I mean, you know, to me, it's a crucifix. It is a controversy for the sake of it, but one has to build the kind of society. I mean, people have died for the kind of society that we want to build. And for me, it's important unless we stand up for that kind of society when things go wrong. For me, you know, loyalty for me, an issue of loyalty and disloyalty. Loyalty, I think we have to rethink what loyalty means. That loyalty means defending the institutions of our democracy. That to me is a new kind of loyalty. Is the key part of it. And so, and if that is controversial, I think that we still have a very long way to go in building this democratic culture. But, of course, you know, building a democratic culture doesn't happen overnight. We don't just say, there's the Constitution and there's this sort of thing, and now, you know, next 5 minutes, the next day, you know, a dissent will be, you know, there will be this sort of culture of engagement. It's going to have to be built. And it's going to have to be built by, I think, individuals, by the SABC, by a kind of SABC that we're going to be built, you know, by a new kind of board that we're going to put, the kind of people that we're going to put on the board, you know, that's going to build our democracy. And not only our democracy, but it's going to also help us as we go. It's a very, very difficult time economically. It's a very difficult time also for our society in terms of, you know, we really have to also relook at the kind of values, you know, where do we want to go? So, and the SABC is a very crucial part, you know, of that. So, you know, it's a very, very important decision in terms of, you know, the allocation of people on the board. Because if you miss the boat now, I think miss the boat now, it's going to be very, very difficult, you know, to reverse it. And the space is very, very narrow, actually, to make these changes. It's not an ideal situation. It's a very narrow space, so it can be very important to get it right.
Afternoon, Prof. You remind me of one issue, but I don't have a lot of time to discuss it. But I'm glad because at last you seem to be agreeing that controversy is a controversy. Whether you put it from here to here, you change it, the controversy is a controversy. Maybe it can be in the interpretation of an individual whether whether it's a controversy or another thing. But it does remain like that. Chair, one question which I want to... I have my famous question. Which I've been asking patiently from yesterday, but that will come last for now. This issue of firewalls, if you look at the issue of corporate governance, there are some responsibilities and duties which lie to the board, to the group CEO, and so on. Now, I think, you see, Chair, it's an easy thing to say. But I just want to see, Chair, practically, how do you do the firewall? Whether the issue becomes the personalities which are at play at a particular time. Because if a wrong decision is taken, it doesn't matter whether it's the head of news and so on. Who's liable? It's not that person. It will be the board and the group CEO. They are going to be cited. But we are saying we want a firewall. Now, I'm raising that chair whether it does not become an issue of personalities which are at play at a particular time. Is it really an issue of firewall or the issue of personalities which are at play at that time between the news, the head of news, the group CEO, and so on, which create problems other than the system? Whether it's a systematic problem or it's personalities. That's one issue, Prof, which I think maybe if you can elaborate on that. Because of corporate governance, because corporate governance does not talk about if you go to SABC, that head of news is not liable. It will be liable, but finally the liability is with the board, not that person. So you create the firewall, I don't know for whom, for the group CEO, but become liable and the board finally become take liability and so on. The second issue, I'm sure it has been well contested on relation to the matter which you have just been discussing just now. Now, and how do we get it right on this thing of firewall? Taking the reality of corporate governance in terms of liability and so on. The second issue, Chair, is that when the question Prof was raised in terms of who knew, you raised the matter that the government would bail banks. I said the communists knew that when capitalism collapsed, government will take over again. So it's the normal thing, it's known that that will happen at one time. So it's happening but in a lighter note on that one. The second issue is that I've got the question, Prof, which I've been patiently asking from yesterday. The issue whether are you having a TV set, I know you do. And I know you got a TV license. But it's in areas. Why? Can you explain? As a person wants to be in the SABC board, but in areas of a TV license, why, Prof?
Why, when you put it, I mean,
you are a public, apply for a public position, and this is a public broadcaster. Thank you.
Careful there.
It's either the truth or he's setting you up.
But, I mean, to start on, you know, how do we deal on that, on the firewall, actually? You know, for me, that is actually part of good corporate governance. So it doesn't go against good corporate governance. I mean, I think for me, that's actually, you know, the core of corporate governance. And secondly, for me, it's also, it is not just an issue. I mean, whatever we do here now, and whatever we decide in terms of where the SABC is going to go forward to, it is not about personalities. And this is about the long-term future. So what we fix here is, you know, it's not for now. It's meant for, you know, this is meant for the long-term. And so on. So, yes, maybe, you know, there may have been an element of personalities and so on, but, you know, at the heart, if you analyze that, what is the problem? You know, it is really a structural problem there that has to be addressed, and it doesn't have to just be addressed on the sparse board, but going into the future, because the problems are going to crop up again and again and again, and, you know, unless one deals with it now, you know, this a new board might come up, and, you know, these sort of things will just be repeated again. I mean, for me, it's actually also, you know, on this corporate governance of the SABC, because we have to address it. You know, the idea of the public broadcaster that we, you know, I would even make even, you know, a further argument of even of bringing in, you know, how do you strengthen this oversight, because that, you know, in terms of corporate governance, bringing in civil society also, you know, as part of that watchdog, and even if it has to be even, you know, finding a clearly defined role for civil society to do the monitoring and evaluation and oversight role. But not only that, but also how do you bring in order to strengthen again corporate governance and make, you know, bring in the accountability, because I think that is the issue, accountability. How do you strengthen it? Even to, you know, to find a mechanism where, you know, the public, you know, as you now mentioned, the people who pay TV licenses, you know, that they actually also have some, you know, that, you know, say in whether, you know, and holding the SABC accountable. You know, to find a mechanism that you can bring in, you know, viewers into the SABC, you know, into that accountability mechanism. Because at the end of the day, if there's going to be an annual, you know, audit of the SABC's programs at the end of this year, I mean, if it's going to be poor programs, you know, what does it mean for an ordinary person, an ordinary individual, and so on? So that bring in finding a mechanism, even, you know, where ordinary license holder or TV viewer or radio listener also have a possibility of holding the SABC leadership, management, board accountable for what they delivered or not delivered during the year. So for me, actually, even extending corporate governance from where it is now, even to, you know, even further, in order just to get that corporate governance structure right.
All right, I think members, I want to suggest that we have a working lunch. We are running behind with two more candidates in terms of our time slot.
My license issue. I'm very passionate the license issue. Why is in arrears for proof?
Arrears? Could I have the privilege to ask where does this information come from, or what may happen? Can I ask that?
No, no, if it's not... in areas who can say so. It's not. It's sometimes asking that question.
Yes, it's not in areas.
No, it's fine. We can verify later, you know, that it's a public without comment.
Thank you very much. Professor, thank you very much for your time. We want to apologize for this, all this delay that is taking place. What time is your flight?
No, it's actually, I had reorganized.
Okay, fine. So you can join us for lunch also. But members are going to have a working lunch.
Okay.
We're not breaking. Can we call in Mr. Kotsu Kumalo, please?
Kumalo, sir. The prof is fine. I don't want to talk to the prof. Can you please just request the Mr. Kumalo?
Kumalo, okay. Give us a minute, please.
For a minute.
Give us a minute.
We know we are using for this place, but... Chair, the matter which I want to raise, Chair, as a matter of procedure, there are certain questions ourselves which we can contest when they are asked, but we have not decided to do so because we are interviewing people must respond. If we want to introduce that, can it be the rule of the rule of the game, so that we are also having that privilege? Because, Chair, I won't take hand where a person asks a question, then there's a contestation while you're asking a question. I don't think it's fair, Chair. Because we're asking question here to a person, and the person must respond. But when other parties start now to interject and intervene in that process, Chair, I don't think it's in the spirit of conducting interviews, Chair. But if that is allowed, Chair, it must be open for all of us so that we can laugh to do that, Chair. Because there are a lot of questions which are asked incorrectly. Some members, they don't even know what's the role of ICASA in terms of election campaign and coverage and so on. Just are putting questions in another direction. So we can love to intervene and correct members so that they can also understand how things work and so on, if that is allowed.
No, I think that we've always had, a very good working relationship here. The general approach here is... Members are free to ask questions that they have to the candidates. And as a general rule, we will not interrupt that. You might disagree with the tone of the question or the line of questioning, but you're always willing as a member to pose another question which might be a sweetheart question, is fine. Kumalo?
Thanks, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Khoso Khumalo. As you've seen in the CV, I was born in Potchefstroom, and then schooled there, went to Vets University, did a BA degree, Dramatic Arts and Film Media Studies, which I did not complete, but I then proceeded to do a BCom degree and also studied economics. If you check my CV, you realize that there's actually an extensive study on economics that I've done. I'm currently doing my MBA, Masters in Business Administration, and also an Honors in Economics. And I've been a member of this portfolio committee, as a whip of the committee also, and a member of the Arts and Culture at some point in time committee. And I'm currently working for Public Works, and as you know, I've been nominated by the Premier of the Free State. He's quite passionate about the credibility and the restoring the confidence of the masses on the SABC. And quite a number of other people also nominated me, as you have seen in my CV. That's what I do. I write quite extensively on broadcasting and also on communication. And quite one of the areas of speciality is frequency management systems that we use and the kind of various platforms that are quite critical for us to deliver a very good broadcasting system. For instance, as you know, that most of the system here in South Africa, they are on the global system of mobility in terms of the current broadband integrated solutions. But actually, it would have been much better for us to have platforms like the Code Division Multiple Access, as we might also want to roll out digital terrestrial television in the future to cover universal access, universal service, and closing the digital divide. So basically, that's what I do, and that's what I am good at. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Short and sweet. Ms. Killian. Nikki.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable De Lange should know if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Just wanted to ask the Honorable Member, Mr. Koch, just wanted to know your current position in the ANC and which structures of the ANC do you serve, and how do you understand the credibility that you want to build in the SABC board, bearing in mind where we come from the severe politicization of the board? How will you see your role, and how will you compartmentalize your SABC role with your role within the ANC structure? Can you please just give us an indication of that first? And then secondly, you made reference to your BCom studies. What specifically would you bring to the SABC board to elaborate on the skills basket that we require there? And then thirdly, what is your understanding? It links to the first question, but what is your understanding of the mandate and the code, editorial code of the SABC? As enunciated in the Act, Broadcasting Act, to ensure that you have diversity of views, very critical independence, editorial independence, etc. If you look at all of that based on the Constitution, how do you see that you can fulfill such a role if your entire career was within the ANC and its structures, and your nomination comes from the Premier of the Free State? Thank you.
I'll prefer to start with the easy ones, Chair. The mandate of the public broadcaster, like any other public broadcaster, like your Australian Broadcasting Corporation, British Broadcasting Corporation, is to do three things. One is to entertain, two is to inform, and three is to educate. Now, your news, your current affairs, they fall under the first category of the part of informing. Now, the quote, most important quote about news and current affairs, the fact that they must be fair, they must be balanced, they must be credible, they must have two important tenets. One is the multiplicity of views, and two is the plurality of opinions. Now, what it means? It means that you create a platform for everybody to be able to express their views for the entire country in terms of universal access and service, but two, you also create a plurality of opinions in an event that there's an opinion about, let's say, COPE or maybe the ANC. You must be able to accommodate various opinions on the matter, even if you might not like either of the opinions. So that's what the code entails. And now, therefore, the news must be independent, they must be credible, there must not be political interference, and that's what I believe in. That's what I've always upheld, and that's what is important. But there's also the committee called the African Union Communication, African Union Committee. That's called African Peoples and Human Rights, Section 149 of the Declaration of the Independence of a Broadcaster. What happens? You would understand that the SABC is from, so the SABC is protected by 192 of the Constitution. That was the culmination of ICASA, no, the culmination of the IBA and Telecommunications Trust in South Africa. That was quite a long time. So they met together on the 1st of September 1999. That's what you then have that protection that is based there. When it comes to the credibility of the institution and what you said about the Premier, like many other, is a citizen of the country, entitled to nominate anybody, and I do not think that there's anything that precludes him or any other person to do. Of course, there could be a perception that if you're nominated by people in such position, it could be that they expect a lot, and I can guarantee you that, ma'am, I do not work like that, nor do I expect the Premier to have such expectations from me. Now, when it comes to the ANC, you would realize if you check my CV, not only just us in the ANC, but I started in the student movement, COSAS, SAICO, and many other, and also at the university as a member of the SRC, and also a president of the All Residents Council. Now, I'm not having any political position that I do hold. I'm not a BEC member of the ANC. I'm not a regional executive committee. I'm not in a PEC. I'm not in the NEC of the ANC. That's what it is. I'm not an office bearer of any party. And I guess maybe because of the amount of work that I used to do here in Parliament, you know, as a spokesperson of caucus and many other, I could never manage to go and be in a position to be a chairperson or a secretary of a branch. When it comes to my studies and funding, I believe that it is quite important for us to have people who can understand the funding mix of the broadcaster. One is that, like any public broadcaster, there are three methodologies of funding a public broadcaster. One is the government grants, two is license fees, and three is advertising. Now, in terms of your education and your news, you might find it very rare that you could actually have a lot of money put in there, because most of the commercial interests in advertising, they'll go for soapies like it's a Dingo, your generation, and many others. So you might not be able to generate a lot of income for that. But you need to then find a way to increase funding of the public broadcaster. Because if you don't have more funding, and you have to repeat programs, if you repeat programs of television, funders, viewers are going to be doing it. They go to the cinema, they go to DSTV, and eventually advertisers will leave. And then, end of the day, your all-media product survey and your rent, that is your radio all-media survey, also will go down. And then that will also affect your NFM living standard measure 6 to 10, because those are the people who are putting a lot of money in terms of advertising. I don't know if I left any other question, ma'am.
No, just in follow-up to that specific one, what do you make of the statement, the SABC is expected to provide information and as part of its duty should evaluate, analyze, and critically appraise government policies and programs. The SABC is not the mouthpiece of the government of the day, nor should it broadcast its opinion of government policies unless they relate directly to broadcasting matters. What is your view of that? Do you support that?
If the SIPC was the mouthpiece of government, you would not have the current situation where actually SIPC is more of a middle-class type of institution. There are very limited stories that come from the Sun and the Koi people. Very rarely we have to see them only on John Schuster's films, and there are not news that comes across there. Two, there's not a lot of news that comes from the far-flung areas in Venda, in Guyana, in many other places, in the deep because except if the violence or except the witchcraft and other things that are reported. If the SABC was a government mouthpiece, every single news bulletin would actually reflect the successes of government. But if you realize most of the protests, delivery the services, the protests, they come through the SABC, many other things that come. It's just that we need to have a total reorientation of how we cover news. Because, for instance, your financials, most of the time, they are not understood by ordinary people. So you have to find a way to do that. You have to give unions a platform to become political commentators. We don't need commentators from these service institutions who must have a PhD or a master's. There are a lot of people out there, organic intellectuals, who can contribute to that. So that statement is not right.
This statement, unfortunately, comes from the editorial code of conduct of the SABC. So it's the editorial code that I have taken one specific paragraph from, where it's actually very interesting. And I believe, Honourable Chair, that all the members of the new board should actually go and read what the charter and what the editorial code of the SABC says, because then they will be better informed to know how they should do their work. Just the last issue, and that is, you will therefore undertake and give a public undertaking to South Africans that should you be elected to the board, you will not take your instructions from the Duly House.
Let me first start with the issue that you spoke about, the code. I know the code quite well. I've studied that and I've checked that, and I've got something that contains it here in the SABC thing. The issue that you asked me a question based on that statement, the question was whether the SABC must become a government mouthpiece or not, and I said no. That's the answer that's what I provided, but that does not show limited understanding of the code. It's about responding to the question based on your analysis of the statement. What was the question again, sorry?
It's just therefore that you give us a public undertaking that you will not discuss your agenda on the SABC board and take your instructions from the Julia.
Yeah, just like in any marriage, sweet, that's what I do.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mr. Khumalo, I think as a person who was sitting here the other time, like Eric has said, we are best placed to know the saga, what is happening at the SABC. I think you must just give us a brief, maybe in two sentences, what do you think needs to be done? A turnaround strategy to make the SABC better for the interests of all South Africans. The second issue, again, is based on your experience as the former whip of this committee. What do you think the best oversight role can be played to make sure that we hold the new board accountable for their doing? And how often do you think it must be done, maybe on the side of the reporting part of it? How do you think often they must report based on your past experience? Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, firstly, Chair, the portfolio committee of communication, like many other portfolio committees, does three things with the institutions. One, they receive the annual reports. Two, they get their strategic plans. And three, they get their budget. Now, in between then, the portfolio committee will then visit various offices or continue to have meetings. In an event that the institutions are having serious problems, then they will get called to come here. It is quite important for the portfolio committee not just to interact with the SABC, like many other institutions, three times, but much more than that, quite closely actually, so that they are able to can follow up on the problems. Now, the question that you asked me, it relates more about what is my vision about where must we take the public broadcaster. I think there are a number of problems. One of them is got to do about restoring the credibility and the standing of the SABC to an extent of your CNN, your BBC, your ABC. Secondly, you need to have a proper funding model, a model that would assist the broadcaster to can actually able to move out of its current problem. And that, as I said, the government must put more money in terms of the grants. The current breakdown that we have is the fact that now advertising put on about 80% of the money. 18% is from license fees, 2% is from that. But that also is not correct, because the manner and how they've done the financials in the SABC does not include the fact that they are not paying tax and government has to build them out of more than 600 million 2 years ago. Now, we'll have to find and revisit whether it's a true reflection of the actual standing of the the way the breakdown is. Lastly, the solution to the problems of the SABC is that we must make sure that the money that comes in and that goes into the SABC is used to fund programs, content development. You realize that there's little money that actually goes to content development, and that needs to be done. And finally, you also will have to make sure that every SABC member or staff, it becomes a collector of SABC fees with some kind of incentive. That will assist, because quite a lot of people are not paying their license. And by the way, I've paid my license, and I've got TVs which I've paid for license for. So I'm just saying, so we need to try and make sure that we work out the issue of the licensing, and also try to get more good programs for us to have advertising. So therefore, that's what I think should be done with the SABC. Money, restoration of the confidence and credibility of the SABC, and then we have good programs that are going to run. Universal access and universal service. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Khumalo, I've got the impression that you have a slight advantage over the other candidates being nominated for the SABC board. You spoke about perceptions, but don't you think, let them ask it in another way, don't you feel uncomfortable being a member of this portfolio committee in the previous parliament and now being nominated as a member of the SABC board? I specifically use the word perception, because in the media, and it can be seen that you being nominated can sort of, I'm not making any allegations, it's just a perception, that this will tarnish the the so-called independence of the SABC board. Just a personal feeling from your side, please.
Yeah, I must say that I have never came across the word uncomfortable, but I know uncomfortable, but I would answer the one that I know. I hear you say whether am I not uncomfortable or uncomfortable. Okay, thank you. Firstly, I must say that we must not create a perception to guide the manner in how we run government or institutions. If there's anything in the law that precludes me or any other person or former member of parliament that says you can't be a member of the SABC board when you're a member of parliament, then I would have not came. But as far as I'm concerned, the constitution allows me as a former member of parliament or any other person to be. If I was on the other side, it wouldn't be. So I'm not uncomfortable, I'm not feeling any bad. Actually, I think my coming to the board would be quite productive, based on the fact that you are saying I've got an advantage. Yes, the advantage I'll use it to make sure that we turn around the SABC board quite well, and it must be good. So I don't feel bad about it. First of all, I'm not a member of parliament anymore, and as I said, I don't hold any political office, but you can't exclude me or want me to feel bad for holding particular political views about the suffering of South African people, you know, the problems that we had, the past in which we come from. I've got a political conscience. I come from a very strong African family, Catholic, Christian background, and my mother brought me quite well, respect of elders and everything, so I will not do anything that can jeopardize the broadcaster, nor would I do things in favor of any of my comrades. I've explained quite well that we must adhere to the code.
Just to follow up, I just want to ask you, Mr. Chairperson, that if anyone in this committee mispronunciate the word, you must make a ruling, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, and welcome, and thank you, Mr. Kumar. I have a question relating to your previous tenure on this committee. You will know that the crisis at the SABC board is currently, the SABC is currently facing has been attributed to the board, it's been attributed to the executive management committee, and I needn't enlighten somebody as knowledgeable about you about that. But some have said that the previous parliamentary portfolio committee was responsible for the downfall, especially in the financial controls of the SABC, particularly in instances when the board should have been coming to this committee to account for the financial situation at the SABC, but didn't have the opportunity for whatever reasons. So that's one of the circumstances that has been attributed to the breakdown at the SABC. My question to you is, what was your experience during your time on the committee? And from that experience, can you extrapolate on how the new board needs to interact with the, how the new portfolio committee and the board should interact with one another in order to optimize those governance and financial control issues in order to prevent this kind of thing from happening again? Thank you.
Thanks. Chair, just to say that I'm not so sure what role the portfolio committee did or played in terms of the demise of the SABC board's financial situation. What I do know is the fact that the SABC in the past 4 or 5 years, they developed a new corporate strategy. One was to try and create a bigger footprint of the SABC News so that it becomes a leader of news in the continent. So therefore, they opened up quite a number of foreign bureaus in Senegal, in Tanzania, in Nigeria, in Lagos, and many others. They also went to Canada, and they also established one in New York last year, and they also have the one in Jamaica. Now, that expansion then created a problem for the SABC to get me too. The fact that now the advertising was also dwindling down because there's competition between three institutions. One, you've got pay subscription television through MultiChoice. You've got free-to-air through ETV. And you've got also new platforms. Now, when there's an economic recession, the first people that suffer are those who are the richest and those who are poor, because those who are richer cannot contribute more money to the charities, so therefore the charities have to close down. So the economic recession, I think, partly did, even before that, it did also contribute to the problem. The second problem why the SABC also had the financial problems was the fact that the money that they had, they actually put it in some of the wrong projects. If you remember, they also involved in Sianoba campaigns, 2010 things and stuff like that, and also they increased more staff members. They also increased their platforms. They established this. They were going to have something like SABC 4 and 5, and also regional stations were increased. So therefore, it will consequently then lead to that financial situation that came to 2 billion. But also we realized there was also a lot of extravagance that took place in the either in the board or in the management or in the entire institution. There have been reported cases of corruption and crime in some instances that has been dealt with. So those are the problems that actually led to the problems of the SABC currency. So the portfolio committee had actually called them to come and account for that. And I must say, I'm here as a candidate, and I'm not here as a portfolio committee. I'm sure the committee would have to find a way to respond to some of those things, because I'm just a candidate. The question that you asked me, Mr. Lee, also asked me to say, what is that that must be done for the SABC? What is that we think should be the interaction between the portfolio committee? And it is an increased oversight role over the SABC board, and partly to check things are going fine with management and everything. Three is regular contact between the board and the portfolio committee, and then also it's some of the institute, various units that are running the corporation. And finally, it is the fact that we need to call them quite regularly. We don't have to wait for things to get bad out of hand. But also, you must understand the SABC has got a responsibility to define the national trajectory of our country. We don't know whether are we a soccer-loving people, are we known for our minerals and energy, or are we known about our crime or anything, stuff like that. So it is the role of the public broadcaster to start to redefine that trajectory of the direction of the country, because it builds strong morals and values of where we are going for our future generations to come and for as we are currently moving.
I'd just like to follow that up. I understand what you mean when you say it was a previous committee, but, you know, I feel, and I think many of my colleagues would agree with me, that, you know, the reason we have everybody's CV in front of us is to give us an opportunity to probe their previous roles, how they worked in those previous roles, what they did, what they didn't do, and how they can bring that experience to bear on their new prospective position in the board. So, I don't know, perhaps you think it's irrelevant, but I think it is very relevant. You say, quite rightly, that the board should have regular contact with the portfolio committee. Do you think the board previously had enough contact with the portfolio committee? Do you think that the portfolio committee and the board's interaction could have been improved in order to predict the financial downfall? You cite all these examples, which are well known to us and to the media, the spending that spiraled out of control, extravagance, allegations of corruption, and so forth. but as the oversight authority and you as the ANC's whip in your previous position, what role did you play in overseeing the SABC board, and how can you bring your experience to bear on your prospective role as an SABC board member?
I must just indicate that during my runs, I had my innings. I did the best of what I could do when I was a whip. And actually, as a matter of fact, I've interacted with SABC long before I even became a member of parliament. If you could check, one of my studies there was media studies, which we did at SABC some 15 years ago. So my interaction with the board or with the management of the SABC itself, it spans much longer time than when I was here. When I was a whip, and it was an understanding, the Portfolio Committee of Communications got a lot of other institutions that they deal with. South African Post Office, ICASA, you know, many that we can just think about. So therefore, the role that they played, it was quite important and prominent, actually. To the fact that they had to intervene when members of the board and the management were fighting. And this fight of the board and management created the problems at SABC. They started on the 4th of March, 2008. When a memo, when the board was hardly 2 months, then the board, the memo that were actually attacking the CEO and all sorts of things, and that memo got leaked to the media, and it became a whole sort of story, then they started to fight one another. They even fought right here in parliament, in the presence of members of parliament. So the committee had to take some action. They called them many times to come and account and explain why they're still fighting. And then also individual contact and communication between the chairperson of the board, the whip, and many other of the people there. So that's what happened. But I can tell you that I have played my part, and my part was perfect and was good. Actually, at some point in time, I was spending more time on SABC matters and others compared to any other institution. So that's what happened. But if I could just say, as I said to you, that from a Christian background, there is a race that I must run, and there are victories to be won. So if you give me power, every hour will change and move. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Kumalo,
General.
If we appoint you to the board and the vacancies do occur here in Parliament and you happen to be next on the line and on the list, would you then resign as a board member, or will you to come back to Parliament, or will you remain in the board? Secondly, one of the members here of this committee earlier on did raise a question of perception of certain individuals who applied to become members of the board, who are either politically connected or that they do contribute to political debates, either in newspapers and so on. Would you then assure this committee that you will be independent when applying when discharging your duties as a board member?
Yeah, firstly, I must indicate that I was very lucky to be a member of parliament, and I think there are many men and women across various liberation movements who could not make it to parliament and who have never seen the doors of parliament not to participate in. So I do not have any regrets for the 5 years I spent. Actually, I think I was very lucky that within that 5 years I was appointed a whip and also in the Portfolio Committee of Communication. So that I respect that I really like the ANC and appreciate it for what they've done for that period. So when that occasion comes to come to parliament, it will be a decision that I will take at that point in time. But I can tell you that I'm very passionate about the SABC. So I would prefer to stay in the board instead of coming back to parliament. As I said, there are many people out there who actually come here to parliament and actually become members. When it comes to perception, I need to be shown one person in this country who's not politically linked. I need to see that person. Somebody must tell me that this one does not have a political view because of the background and the history which we come from. You can't be. Say that you don't have a political position or can't. You could pretend to be an independent because quite often what we do, we assume that people in the NGO sector and CBO sector, they are actually apolitical, and it's not true. So I can't remove the political background which I come from. All that I could do is to act appropriately and make sure that I'm not biased against other political parties and I do not give unfair advantage to the party that I belong to. Thank you. Yeah, but general.
General is impressed. Ms. Magazi.
Thank you, Chairperson. How are you, Mr. Kumalo?
I'm fine.
Former member. Mr. Kumalo, I just want to ask one question. If you were appointed to sit on the board of SABC as a board member, what would you do or what improvements can you do to make sure, because there's this assumption or perception from the gender activists of this country that when it comes to women's issues or women's activities, you will find that when there is a time where women should be exposed or should be aired in the television, there is bias televised activities. You will only, women's issues or activities will be only be aired on Women's August. And yet, gender activists of this country, they're the ones who are keeping this fire burning throughout 360 days. Now, as the member, I assume, as the member of the board, what would you make do to make sure that the coverage also, it goes towards favoring or balancing both our activities and the public in large, because we are also part of the society? What would you do? Say?
There are 4 million blind people here in South Africa that cannot see television. So we must find a way to mitigate for them. And one of the ways to mitigate for them is to try and get what is normally called transcriptive television products, which in America they do that. It's a public-private partnership thing. You put that next to a television, then it explains to the person who's blind what is happening on television. That's the first part that we must do. Two, there's more than 2 million people in South Africa who are hearing, who are having hearing impairment. So they can't hear what is said in TV. So we'll have to make sure that television must also have those subtitles in all the programs, and secondly, there must be sign language. That's one way to mitigate for the disabled people in terms of the two. We must make sure that we implement the gender focal points. That I'm sure the corporation will have to do, the equality, equity, transformation, making sure that we meet all the necessary elements of making sure that women are in powerful positions. One of the most difficulties that we have is the matter that must be dealt with by both Home Affairs and partly as the issue that advertising companies, that are the ones who pull most of the adverts, they do not subscribe to our gender policy sometimes. They depict women as objects. They put them there as naked and all sorts of things. So they are the ones that we need to find a way to deal with them so that we don't just consume everything from advertising companies and many things. Just to say to you, Ms. Magazi, that the corporation does one thing only. It's news gathering and current affairs. Most of the other two elements of education and entertainment, they are commissioned from outside. So all that they do is to gather news, to produce them, and to run. That's actually what a public broadcaster normally do. The rest of the other programs, the soapies, and many of them, they are bought and they are paid for through commissioning. So we have to find a way to make sure that women play a prominent role, not only in management, but also in the programs that are running, so that you start to create a good understanding in society that women are not just objects, and women are not going to be downgraded and just be shown when they are marching, when there are cases of this and that against women. So that's something that we have to improve on, and that's something that I think we would have to work on. I'm quite particular about issues of women issues of disabled people, as I explained to you, what must be done. And for me, those are quite critical points, and that must be included in the broadcaster, and especially implementation of the gender focal points, which are quite many. And actually, CGE does have them, so we have to put them in the corporation.
Afternoon, ma'am.
Afternoon, sir.
Chair, my first question I know is in good standing in terms of the TV license. It's paying. And it's the right thing to do to pay your TV license. I'm only having one question. A statement has been made that SABC is heavily politicized. What's your view on that matter?
I think it is an exaggeration. The reason I'm saying it's an exaggeration is the fact that, as I've explained to you, a public broadcaster does three things. It is to inform and to entertain and to educate. You need to show me which part of politicization applies to which of the three elements. If you are going to select news and current affairs, then you are leaving the other part of the entertainment. Is it dealing with favor Dylan or generation politicized? Is it that your advertising and everything that is politicized? But maybe the question, yes, it is, because it might be a bit biased towards the middle class and the upper ending of the society. There's very little stories that come about the senior citizens of our country. There are very little stories that come about disabled people of our country. So the politicization could only be a disadvantage, but it can be that a particular political party is the one that pushing political views. Maybe it is political to the fact that you've got news that are quite different for SABC 3, SABC 1, SABC 2. They're quite different. And I must say, Mr. Kholwane, the day when we achieve total universal access and service, I would then answer that question to say whether it is political or not, because it is not. For instance, SABC 1 covers 93% of the 91% of the country. SABC 2 covers 87% of the country, and SABC 3 covers 82% of the country. Now, therefore, it means there are more than 5 million people out there who are not covered at all. In some of the rural areas, you can't have SABC 1. In some cases, you can't have SABC 2. So it is the responsibility of the board to make sure that before 2010, we must achieve total universal coverage and access for everybody. We might as well, Mr. Chairperson, use a number of systems. Where we cannot roll out the Centec analog, we go for digitization. If it's not working, we try the digital terrestrial television. If that's not working also, we use the hybrid system for the code division multiple access. I'm sorry, I'm very technical when it comes to this issue, Chair, but you forgive me. Thanks, sir. I'm very sorry about it. Sorry, General.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to go into the fact that the SABC is highly politicized, but if you talk to the ordinary staff of the SABC, they've got a different view, but we leave it there. Just one question, are you a loyal and disciplined cadre of the ANC? If so, how on earth can you be political independent? For instance, if the board has to take decisions on a political matter, and it will happen, as you know, will you certainly drive the ANC's view?
Basically on the same line, we've earlier heard a serious concern about a previous candidate and his ability to really express views outside and within that could create attention. You know, for instance, within the board, and then also make public pronouncements outside with a different cap, be it critical of the ruling party or whatever. Our concern is similar. If you are an advocate for the ruling party, making pronouncements outside, how will you make it compatible, your role as an ANC activist on the one side, and your role as an independent board member? Because if you look at the essence of the SABC legislation, it is required that you have independence in that group.
Yeah, I must just say that I would have expected honorable members to judge me on the basis of my understanding and the ability to can actually be a good board member, not on the basis of the political position that I hold. The party that I've been a member has been under siege since its launch in 1912, and it has never been at peace. For more than 30 years, between 1960 and 1990, its leaders were hanged, killed, imprisoned, exiled, and stuff like that. I do not expect anyone to be nice to me. Especially people who come from other political parties. I didn't expect that. It would be ridiculous of me to expect people to be nice on the basis of my political affiliation. And I was expecting that. But it would be good that you judge me on the basis of whether I can be a good board member or not. Because if you do that, you would then have to subject other people, whether they are COPE, you would have to ask this and every single member of their political affiliation, whether they are COPE, they are DA, they are AWB, or they are UDM, or anything, stuff like that. You know, I'm saying my independence will only be judged once I'm in the board, but you'll find it difficult to can pin me down to say that I won't be independent, because it's a perception that you are creating, Mr. Fanarobeh, that maybe I might not be. I must be biased to the ANC, but I can tell you your issue is not about whether I could be independent or not. The fact that you're not so sure if you want to see ANC prominent members or members in this particular board. And I agree with you at some point in time. We discussed this matter with Kate Skinner from the Freedom of Expression Institute that maybe we need to find a way to select a board that will not be even be appointed by the portfolio committee, or maybe to find some independent judges and people to do that. But as I said to you, in this country, that you need to show me an independent political person. And I agree there could be many. It is that maybe you don't like somebody who's too close to the ANC, you're feeling a bit uncomfortable about it. I'm sorry, it's part of my history. That's what I come from. And with me, I always express the good and the bad things about my life because they made me what I am, and I can't change that.
Thank you, Jefferson.
Chairperson, I know Mr. Khumalo when you were still a young man, a very young man, younger than this. And I think Mr. Khumalo is a member of the African National Congress, and he has agreed to that. And when the African National Congress was aspiring to be government, there was a document that said, ready to govern. And I think he has read that, and he has worked on that. Mr. Khumalo, my question will be, based on the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999, Section 17.1, that focuses on disclosure of conflict of interest. It states that a person may not be appointed on the board unless the necessary disclosure has been made. My question is to you. Are you associated in any way with a company in the communication industry? If so, can you share your details with us? And because of what I've quoted when I started, I want you to tell us honestly, because I also think that you are interested in improving the life of everyone in South Africa, not only the ANC. As you have just said, it can be COPE, it can be a non-partisan, but I want you to tell us the details in full. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I must just indicate that my story, I'm a church mouse. I'm very poor. I do not have any business relations or any entity that's got anything to do with the SABC. I was a member of two companies called Ruby Mountain Trading and also one called Greenazer, but those companies have resigned from them. So I'm not in any way or another involved in any business. Actually, I consider myself as a committed civil servant, also as a person who can serve in the board without fear or favor, without any commercial interest or any intended intention to be rich or to use the corporation for my own personal benefit. So I do not have any interest. What if I answer the question?
If you've got one more, right, I will give you the liberty.
Mr. Kumalo, to follow up on what Mr. Van den Berg and Honourable Killian were talking about, is it fair to sum up what you are saying in relation to your political history? Are you saying that it's irrelevant? It doesn't matter?
No, I didn't say that. Actually, if you listen to me, it's very relevant. It's very relevant, actually, because
let me elaborate. You said you expected that we would judge you on your ability to serve on the board, that we would interview you and ask you questions about your fitness for the purpose of working on this board. Mm. And you're absolutely right, that's what we're here to do. My question to you is, do you think your political history is irrelevant to that fitness for the purpose of the SABC board? Do you think it doesn't matter?
You see, you take my political history and you bring it to the corporation. And I do not see how that there's no mixing that. If I was in a youth league as a provincial secretary in the Northwest Province for 6-8 years, it's irrelevant to the SABC board. What becomes relevant is whether I would use my position in the board to further the interests of the ANC at the exclusion of other political parties. The other question that you want to ask me, but you're not asking me that, that I'm saying to you that, and I've said it to Ms. Killian, said to Mr. Van Berg, that it would be unfortunate that you pay little attention to the issues that I'm raising about how we can come to assist the broadcaster to become a good broadcaster. And all the important elements that I spoke about, the code of practice and stuff like that, the funding models that I proposed, the type of things that can come to, for me, those are more important issues than whether I am still a member of the ANC League or not, or a Women's League or Communist Party. For me, that is not irrelevant, but it's immaterial for this particular interview.
What is that?
It's just the issue that I raised earlier with regards to loyalty to the ANC. So therefore, what you're saying to us, your history is there. You're a loyal and disciplined member of the ANC. How can we trust you then that you will not take your instructions from the Julia?
I don't expect you to trust me, ma'am. Actually, I came here knowing that you will not trust me. I'm not surprised. It's not a big problem for me. It is that, as I said to you, that I cannot disassociate myself from the ANC, which I'm a member, which I was involved into, but I do not hold any political office. And I said that we must be careful as parliamentarians that we should not bring our own religious, cultural, sometimes whatever perceptions into law. If there's anything in law that says you can be a member of the portfolio committee, but because of that, I would not have came. But I'm saying somebody needs to prove to me what is that, is there anything that says you can't be a member of the DA, you have to be, but you can't be a member of the AWB, you can't be a member of the UDM, and if you're in the board. Now, if that's the issue, that's what we must focus on and deal about there. But as we're dealing with perceptions of what might happen if you've got somebody who was in the committee, who was in the committee, was also a whip and was from the ANC, it is a distrust that you might have for the ANC as a whole, but you just extended that to me. So, but as I said to you, I do not see myself being biased against the other political parties if I'm in the board, and also apart from that, there are institutions that govern that. The CASA deals with that. BCSA deals with that. There are many things. There's PAJA, you know, that actually makes sure that administrative justice is taken into consideration. So there are ways that you can deal with a board member if they go away or they seem to be favoring another political party.
Mr. Kumalo, thank you very much for your time. What time is your flight? Are you staying over?
I'm staying over, Chuck.
That's very good.
Yes, I'm staying over.
Thank you very much. So we'll see you then after the proceedings.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Keep well then.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Andile Mbeki.
Babumpeki, unjani? Ubuyile? Kwezi kwakho namhlanje. Nesibindi.
General Rolam, if I'm right, what you are saying is this man doesn't understand once bitten, twice shy. He doesn't understand this. Am I right in interpreting what you are saying? What did you say? Oh, he's got a little right. Okay, welcome to the committee. You've been through this procedure previously. We're going to give you 3 to 5 minutes just to take us to your seating and explain to us why you think you should be brought back to the board. In your case, after it was dissolved, why you think you still remain a worthy candidate. Nothing precludes you from coming back, but why you think we should bring you back after this committee had dissolved you. So you know, you maybe you're starting on a back foot here. You are disadvantaged perhaps, because this committee has judged, not you as an individual, but the collective, as we indicated to you, that you are part of that collective. So you're really going to have to motivate twice as hard why you think we should bring you back. After you take us to your CV, members will ask questions and you will respond to each one. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the members of the House. I'm just going to skim through quickly in terms of my CV, which I believe we are all in position of. Firstly, to say that I believe that for me to be in this space is a base of predetermination. You know, I grew up, I was born in the rural villages of King Williamstown. I spent my youthful life in the dusty street of KwaZulu-Natal, and I've been well exposed into a number of other parts of the world, studying and otherwise. But the first time, Chairperson, that I've ever had an experience of interacting with media, in addition to my passion, was in 1978, which is 31 years ago. And that was the time when there was an outside broadcasting facility at Kong in King Williamstown by the old radio presenter, elderly man, Augustine Nongauza. He was actually conducting a program, Ingqowa Mali Yezentlalo, which was a fundraising initiative. And I just appealed to him, asked me to read some of the announcements. And ever since then, I've always had the passion to play in this space. I think the second time that I got into actually again into airways was in 1987, where I was going through the teacher education program, and one of the radio presenters of the then radio professor was saying at the college where I was, he needed somebody who could actually express himself and speak closer in a very articulate manner. And I happened to be the one of those persons who was known at the college to be very eloquent in terms of speaking closer. So he then developed a partnership with me at the college from time to time when he would be visiting the college that I'll get the interview. In short, Jefferson, little did I know that I was being prepared those years for great hearts in, to play in this space. At the age of 21, I found myself behind the mic in 1990. Up to 1993, I was presenting youth programs, religion, sport, and educational programs. And I also did a bit of stint on the television side, ironically in the SABC platforms, where I was also involved in the actual production of television programs, especially in the religious desk of SABC. I was the Eastern Cape coordinator of everything which was happening. These were the days, it was not easy for anyone, especially black South Africans, to find themselves in the airways. So I got in there based on merit. I subsequently substantiated that knowledge by a bit of academic background, which you are all privy to.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van der, Julie Killian, General Olomisa.
Sorry. Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Mbeki, you was on the previous board. You know things didn't go well. What would you do different now if you've been selected on this new SABC board? What will you do different? And just one or two things, what you can point out that sort of drive the SABC into the ground and all the tension between the SABC board. We've spoken a lot about that when we did interviews, but just one or two from your side, and what will you do different?
Professor, I think this question relates more to some of the questions a lot of the people asked me to say. Why would you really want to go back to SABC after being through almost everything that you've been through? And I'm sitting here, Jefferson, as a product of yourself, as members of this house. I really appreciate the interaction which I have had over the years with members of this house. You have actually molded me. You have contributed a lot into my own well-being. But there are very few people in this country today who have so much wealth of information about SABC as a corporation, about the ICT sector in the entire South Africa, and about broadcasting as an industry. You are sitting here, Honorable Fanabat, one of those very few people that are hard to come by. And when this call came to say, I must consider really coming back, I remember there is a song which is sung by many groups, the Joyous Celebration, but I like the shorter version of Pastor Benjamin Dube. Will say, with this type of information that I know, it could actually make you to spend sleepless night when you think about what is happening at SABC. And without necessarily paraphrasing this song directly, it says, do I run away from the problem when I know so much about it? And the call says, no, I can't give up now. I've come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road was going to be easy in this journey. But I believe, because I'm a child of the Lord, that He has never brought me this far to lead me. in terms of the key critical issues that are happening at SABC, Honourable Honourable. This question links into turning the organization around. Most academics and scholars, when they talk about turning the organization around, there are five key critical pillars of turning the organization around. And out of the five key critical pillars, you do the assessment of an outside assessment. The number one is that you look at whether there are proper processes and systems in place in an organization. Two, you look at human resource in terms of personnel. Three, you look at the whole notion of finance in the organization. Four, you look into the issue of your customs, your customers, your stakeholders, and all the major players, and then structure support system. From an academic point, of which I'm also part of the academic people of this country, from an academic point and as a consultant, if you are commissioned to turn an organization around, you tell your client to say, at least you need to have about less than 50% of the aspects that I've spoken about in a problematic state. Should you have more than 50% of that, before you could actually start even doing your work, you have to tell your client to say, you know, this organization is in a serious problem. It's in a state of crisis. It requires an intensive care. Chairperson, I can actually take you one by one in each one of these five aspects. I have key examples on all five of them. I can take you, just by way of example, on the financial part, which is the most critical one. You have an organization at SABC that has a wage bill of $1.89 million, a wage bill. That organization, Chairperson, can effectively and efficiently operate less almost $800 million out of $1.8 billion. The bulk of it is excess debt. In terms of people who are running their own organization, when top finance, knowing that very well, it's your own organization, you know that for each and every rand that you spend to a person, there is subsequent 2 to 3 rand more that you spend on other issues around the person. That includes your office space, your software, your technology, and all those other things. So, at $1.8 billion, you are standing to spend on personnel only very close to $4 billion. And the business of SABC, it's not about people. It's about content. Before you touch that, you already have a problem. And one example in conclusion, Chairperson, I know other members of the House have shown their hands up. We have three platforms at SABC on the television side. SABC 1, SABC 2, SABC 3. 4 years ago, these platforms were actually managed by about 40 people. And we made a clear and conscious decision as a board, which I was part of, to say we need to make sure that part of our responsibility is to develop the sector and make sure that we position South Africans who are interested, particularly in the content space, to play in this area. And I would want the stage chairperson to give the credit to the former COO of SABC, who's amongst us, Usole Mgwela, whom we're driving together this process. And then we said we need to create a division that is only going to focus, and we called it Content Enterprise, run by 40 people. And at the time, it had a wage bill, that division alone, of $30 million. As we speak, Jefferson, that division has 485 people with a wage bill of $600 million. Now, when you look into that, you say, the whole purpose, which was so genuine, we
created those divisions to make sure that there's a development of the sector, and the reverse has happened. You are sitting here, Chairperson, with somebody who understands the intricacies of that, and with the clear, proper solutions in place, which I could actually take you through. How do we then reverse that? You cannot afford at this day and age at SABC to entirely put new people who do not understand the intricacies, the behaviors of the systems, the personnel, how often it actually gets defrauded. It will be a disaster. You have someone here in me who has really considered to heed the call of saying, I'm making myself as a sick special lamb. I know that a lot of people are going to say, is it because you don't have life really outside SABC? Chairperson, it's not the case. I'm also driven by the scripture which is written in the book of Matthew, chapter 8, verse 39, which says, whoever gives his life in my name will get it. So I'm saying, Chairperson, I am putting my neck on the block to say SABC has to be recovered in the debt initiative. And for it to be recovered, amongst others, you need people who know what are the actual causal problems and how best can we turn it around. You have your name.
Sindaki, but can I just, also intervene here? When the board was dissolved, it was your second term as a board member. That means you served one full term and then a portion of the second term. And these problems that you are talking about happened under your fifth. You were there. And you are asking us now to put you on for the third time. Why do you think we should have confidence in you when two opportunities were presented to you and you could not correct the very things that you are reporting on today?
Chairperson and members of the House, I can safely say that I have served one full term at SABC. The second term was full of drama and number of things. One of the reasons that we could not actually correct most of these issues, a lot of people are only beginning to know today that SABC has a problem. It's not the case. With us, Chairperson, at the beginning of the year last year, when management came to us to present a budget deficit of 600 million, you knew nothing about that. We said, no, it cannot happen. We cannot have a situation where we have taken an organization from about 340 profit, and you say that you are bringing us to us about a 600 million deficit budget. It cannot happen. But what happened, Chairperson, in that process? And this is why I was one of those people who said, you know, I think it is in the best interest of the country, particularly the two major players around SABC, the financial institutions that are responsible to even give overdraft facilities to the organization, the advertising community, which are the main drivers of our revenue. I took that conscious decision, Chairperson, to say, under the circumstances we are serving, there comes a time where you put your own personal interests behind and put the interests of the country ahead of everything else, and say, this is the best. Had we given an opportunity, Chairperson, and unfortunately, most of the issues that happened during the 18 window period, we did sensitize the members of this House to say, there are problems. I remember we were here in March, Chairperson. There are serious problems in SABC which we are trying to address. And it's so unfortunate, Chairperson. Some of the scripts that you have, they can actually reflect that. Some members of the House say, no, 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 you are interfering too much. Leave management alone. We said, hey, there are serious issues when by the time they surface, it will be too late. We're coming from a 300 million profit to an organization which was taking a nosedive, and in terms of expenditures, and the expenditures were skyrocketing. And said there comes a point when these two are going to meet, and they're not going to actually glide together. The expenditures are going to go up. We tried to solve that problem, Chairperson, but it was just a very difficult era in the political dispensation of this country, and we cannot shy away from that. It was very difficult for us to exercise the authority that was derived from yourself over management, and that made it very impossible for us to function. Chairperson, if ever this House so decides to give me the mandate to go to SABC with full confidence, Chairperson, I know what has to be done. There's got to be a very clear line in SABC between people who apply for jobs and people who come in by processes of parliament. There's got to be a very thick line between employees and board members. And if you give me the power to go back to correct these things, I will get everybody in a very straight and narrow line. Things that had to be done by managers will be done by managers. In terms of PFMA, it's very clear. From Section 49 up to Section 52, it explains the role of board members. It explains our role as accounting authority. We have had a very natural progression in this country, Chairperson. We had King One, which was trying to put in place aspects of governance. We had King Two, which separated the confusion around roles. Chairperson, now we have King Three. King Three is very clear on issues of interest, undisclosed interest, and liability to directors. If you so appoint me, I give you the assurance and undertaking that I am not going to wear kids' gloves and go down all in the name of protecting people who are not doing what they are employed to do. Another thing, Chairperson, it's a different ball game altogether when you have people who do not know what has to be done. It's better because if you have a child, you can actually educate the child to understand things. But if you have people who do not know that they do not know, it's a problem. And this is what is actually eroding the base of SABC. We need a major mindset change at SABC. And Jefferson, I have that quality. On one hand, I'm able to reach out to people. But on one hand, if I have to be firm and fair, I have demonstrated that in this House. When some things are wrong, I stand up very firm and say, this is wrong. We cannot tolerate it. We have borrowed the SABC from our children. We want to give it back as intact as it is.
Thank you, Ms. Mbeki. Just a question to you. In your experience, you made quick reference to a difficult political dispensation that complicated the establishment and functioning operations of the board. Could you indicate to us two things? The one, your view on what led to that conflict. Was there political interference? And in your case, were you ever asked to resign by any political institution so that the borders collapsed? That brings me to the second element, which is linked to that question, and that is, do you believe that people who hold political office in any political party could serve in a board without serving narrow interests of a specific organization, specifically politically? I know we need sector representation in the board, but political influence could very often cloud your vision and the rapport that exists between members of the board. In your view, was there a problem there, and did that perhaps lead to the rift and fraction forming within the board, executive management, etc.? And then just lastly, how do we turn, if we talk about this bloated bureaucracy that has become established, to what extent was the additional jobs that were created part of an attempt for job creation rather than focusing on broadcasting and the broadcasting mandate of the organization? We look at the numbers that you're talking of. It's actually hair-raising. What do we do now with those sort of wage bills to get the corporation back in line? You cannot simply just go big from government, because government must then decide to take away allocations made to other very, very crucial elements of government functioning. So how do we do that? What do you foresee? Is there a skills audit necessary? How do you do that?
Thank you, Honorable Kilian. On the issue of my resignation, when Chairperson and I came for the first time in this house, I was a young person, relatively in terms of the definition of young person, the people in this country. I'm now youthful. I've graduated from being a young person. The point I'm driving at, Chairperson, is that I'm a very independent person, very spiritual person. I'm able to assess. There normally talks about two component sectors of people, say others are idealists, others are realists. Chairperson, I looked at what was happening at SABC. And the move for me to consider to step down was not based on the political turmoil which was happening in the country, because it is in the nature of politics, Jefferson, that in the school of politics general, there are no vegetarians. It's all carnivores. People eat each other live. So that did not disturb me at all. Because I have had known that it's always part of any transition, and I've been part of so many of them, and they've never actually disturbed me. What disturbed me the most, honorably, is that after so much effort that we have made to try and build the industry and commission so many briefs out, in line with what we started with Mr. Mukwege there. Now, when people get a letter of appointment from SABC, you go home so proud, so excited, but you have to start working on that brief, and you have to take that letter to a financial institution. You get there, the financial institution say, we have no confidence, no faith on the status of SABC as it stands now, because of the problems that are there. When I looked at that chapter 7, I said, if I am part of the problem and there is a solution to regain the confidence of SABC, and if I could assist by making a contribution to regain the confidence of SABC, the second aspect linked to this exactly what they're wanting. We have only one bank today in the country, South Africa, that has still actually afforded SABC with overdraft facility. And it's Absa Bank. And, I mean, we need to applaud the efforts of that organization. Some banks have withdrawn their overdraft facility. As we speak, SABC is only surviving overdraft facility of 500 million from Absa. It's not SABC money. And when you look at that, you say, why other financial institutions are withdrawing their facilities? They say, we do not trust that those that are at the helm of the organization are believed, or the leaders have confidence in them. And I said, I would rather pull out in the interest of the country, so that our main drivers, the advertisers, could regain the confidence on the organization. I would rather step down so that financial institutions when people actually get business from SABC, they can take those financial institutions, and on the back of that, they can be funded. It was a very clear, very conscious decision. I am not the type that can be ever persuaded, especially when I have made a decision like this. On, I think I've answered both questions on the recession and political. The other part about the bloatedness and the job creation. One of the issues that really makes me feel to say, when I was persuaded to say make myself available, but people who believe that at least there is something that I know, and historically and in terms of institutional memory, I could actually help to take this organization from where it is going forward. We made a decision to support job creation by commissioning more briefs to have more people actually supplying SABC with content. You know what is happening is that in other countries, you would go to France, you would go to America, and many other countries. The type of content they commission is global in nature. And SABC, the type of content that we are commissioning is for local consumption. It becomes very difficult to take that content into the global market. So, where we are now, the very same thing that we started, it was under Solomon Kotler's time that we had about a maximum of 5 companies that were supplying SABC with content. And we have since increased that to about 400 companies now that are supplying SABC with content. When I wake up, Jefferson, and I hear that SABC has decided to stop commissioning or to stop or to park for a while giving businesses to companies, I said, this is going against the call of government. Because what government has done, government said, we are in recession. And corporates, please do us one thing. Please hold on unto the jobs that you now have until we are over this loop. On the other side, SABC is saying you appoint one company, it has creatives, it has actors, you can find that maybe that brief that you have commissioned has direct involvement of 30 people in it. And behind those 30 people, one person is looking after 10 family members. When you just say, no, we're going to stop, we're going to cut, you are affecting 300 people. And when you look at 400 companies that we have moved from 5 companies, and you say maybe out of 400 is about 60%, so it means it's about 260 companies that are now affected. You do your calculation and you say 260 times 30 times 100. How many people are affecting? And I said, SABC is going against the will of government now. While government is saying, let's create jobs, SABC is killing jobs. And I said, but unless you have someone with a clear conscience socially who can be part of the board, and you say, in actual fact, the problem of the money is not with the commissioning and other things. It is in this excess rate which I can take you on a line-by-line basis. Clear, 2 examples. Pre-1994, we had a situation where government was actually incentivizing public sector employees, but was not paying them well. But the incentives were better than in private sector. In private sector, people were getting more cash into their pockets. Some of these were the model of pension contribution. We had a situation at SABC pre-1994 where in an ideal organization, when you run your own company, pension contribution is a rand for rand. And the global standard is that 7.5 by the employer, 7.5 by the employee. SABC is the opposite. It's 2 rand for a rand, which was the post-1994. What has happened between 1994 and to date? SABC has gradually improved salaries to catch up with the private sector. And therefore, we are no longer at a state where we can actually be attributed to be an ordinary private sector. By way of example, okay, let me finish this point before I where we are now is that SABC was making 2 rand contribution into a pension fund. The reason why a lot of people were not willing to leave SABC, and I'm not being racial, I'm not being a racist, but there are more white people who entered SABC before 1994. They are not willing to move. You know, some of the opportunities that exist there is that you apply for a promotion, and when you apply for a promotion, you get into a contract. They are willing to stay where they are because of the contribution which you are making. Until we did that diagnosis last year, Chairperson, where we said, no, there is something wrong here. The pension fund is in surplus. Why are you continuing to feed the surplus, guaranteeing people who are complaining that they don't have money in their pocket, when they go out of this organization, they are going to drain these resources? In addition to that, we will even have some of other excesses like medical aid. There's post-medical aid benefit retirement. We say, where is this money going to? And you find out that we are paying for people who retired 19 and us, but we still have to budget for them now. And said, why? Said, no, this was what was agreed upon. Said, when we were changing the salary structure and the remuneration structure, why this aspect was never raised? One of the things which management has been so good to us, I can say without fear, is that they were able to hide information. Until Jefferson last year, we just said, you know what, we'd rather be told, we're accused of being almost a full-time at this, but we have to dig into this. And when we started digging, it's when the debt was coming up. And when the debt was coming up, instead of correcting these things, there was stakeholder involvement going out to ask people to say, hey, talk to these people. You know what they are doing. They're not doing their work. What we're doing, Chairperson, was the work of protecting the assets of SABC. In terms of salary increment, I'm going to quote this by way of example. This is out in the public domain, Chairperson, and it goes up. By way of example, in 2007, the CEO package, including things like allowances and other bonuses, was at a total package of 3.8 million. And at the end of 2008, that package was at 4.5. How did it happen? Management came to us. They say, look, everything is going so well in the organization. From 3.8 to 4.5 means a 19.5% increase in 1 year. Okay? You ask me, which public sector institution has given anyone a pay rise of 19.5% when now we're struggling over 8%? How did it happen? I was there, Chairperson. Now, this is time for me to account. Management comes to us, say, towards the end of the business, all is going well. We are doing so well. Revenues are in place. So at least it's time for us to reap the benefits of getting bonuses. Say, okay, we need to make sure that as you as top management, you have to reinvent money for those that are in the bargaining council, and then work out the figures. They worked out all the figures. They arrived at about an amount of about 130. They said, it is there, we're not going to touch it. It's going to honor our agreement of 12.2% that we've entered into over a period of 3 years. So it's fine. Okay, what remains then, therefore, management? You can take it, and then you can split it. This is how these calculations, after we said the balance of this, then can go to top management. That's how it happened. Chairperson, in the very same financial year, management comes to us. He say, look, we are not going to honor that wage negotiation agreement entered into. We have a shortfall of about 65 million. I said, how come? No, we have taken money that we have reinvested and we've put it into operation. So what that means, once everybody is calling up for belt tightening, it only applies to those that are at the lower level and everybody else in the country, but not to them. And we say, it cannot happen. You have to find ways. And our program of actually changing this organization around, looking at all these excesses and trying to cut them out, we are embarking on it aggressively. Once you were doing that, with clear processes and systems in place, there was a huge outcry and campaign out there. People being bussed from all over the country to campaign to say, this board must be removed before you can actually let these things to be known by the public. That's what was happening. But without getting to that, Chairperson, in short, I have been part of the system. I know...
Can I stop you there? You see, it's not going to be helpful if we dwell too much on the past. We want to put into place a new board. I've given you an opportunity because I think you are also offloading. But I'm not going to give you another opportunity to do that. General Holomisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. You say there was a political turmoil. Are you referring to that time when we were singing Mshiniwami and let others eject it? Huh? All right. Let me take you out, divert a little bit from the financial side, and go to the question of live coverage of political events. In your opinion, who should decide and how a political event should be live? I'm referring to conferences, for instance, congresses, launch of the manifestos. But for the first time last year or early this year, we managed to negotiate with the old board. Just address yourself to the previous era. Who actually takes that decision? Because almost all the opposition parties have made written submission applications. But you will find that the Tripartite Alliance congresses are covered live. Where in the handbook or in your regulations book, where is a paragraph or an area where they say a president, if he addresses a meeting of those Tripartite Alliances, it will be covered live? I've never seen it.
Chairperson, very brief. There is a provision from ICASA in terms of what happens leading up to any election. And in terms of covering live events, if we don't adhere to the ICASA regulations, we stand to have our licenses at SABC being revoked. In terms of our editorial policy, it's very clear that we need to be exercise fairness, accuracy, impartiality, and objectivity. And that is normally a prerogative of the head of news in collaboration with the CEO, who is an editor-in-chief. And when issues of this magnitude are then raised with us as the accounting authority, we do make those interventions. But ideally, we have to adhere, because as a public broadcaster, we have a license, and that license is regulated by ICASA.
Chair, I understand your issue of time. Look, Chair. Afternoon, Mr. Mbeki. How are you doing today? Okay. But look, Chair, I know you are up to date in terms of your TV license. I'm not going to ask that. you are up to date, you are not in areas or any other thing. Chair, look, the difficult chair is to run away from the past. Because I think we're also faced with the question as a portfolio committee. Do we want to break even? Do we want just a new start or a fresh start in the SABC? If you do that, how do you do that so that you have that fresh start? We appointed the board. I'm sure I was there when we appointed the one which has been dissolved. We took a conscious decision. We said, let us put almost six old board members into this board so that there is continuity and the institutional memory. Lately, we knew that that institutional memory, which we are trying to put and make sure that there's continuity, will be digging of old wounds within the board itself. Because the first time the board account on that, on the committee, it was when we asked the question, Chair. I understand the era maybe which the board finds itself political in the country. Chair, there was a time where investigation was commissioned about the issue of blacklisting of other political analysis and so on in the country. And when that report was finalized and disciplinary measures were taken, it was only a final written warning. There is no interference there from anyone from the committee, which I knew of, to reach that decision. We raised that matter, the gravity of that situation, but the board defended the decision to say it was appropriate, blacklisting of a political analyst from other quarters. You see, moving from that, we have the leaks in the board, the famous memo about the group CEO. Until the board was dissolved, the committee never received a formal report on the leaks. We don't know who leaked that information in the board. I don't know. I can assume maybe we are one of them who leaked that, because you never bring back a report. We requested the board to go and investigate and come back with a report. No report was forthcoming. We don't know who was leaking information. I will assume that maybe we were part of the leaks, because we don't know till today. That's one part, the difficult about the old members of the board. The second issue, Chair, the board is dealing with the group CEO. On its own, they flout processes. They didn't understand how to follow processes to deal with the group CEO. They name themselves in trouble in courts and so on. There's no political interference. Is the board taking a decision, want to deal the group CEO, then they go to their meeting, they flout processes, they keep people outside until 2 in the morning, they do all the mess which they've done. The board exercising their fiduciary duties, but they didn't know how to follow processes. They go to court. Unfortunately, the court does not agree with them. They appeal whatever processes follow, Chair. And millions in the process are wasted trying to get rid of the group CEO, which should have followed a proper procedure, which is fair and just to deal with that particular person. But we end up paying millions just dealing with the group CEO by the board, the previous board. Now, that's one issue, Chair. Now, I hear all these issues there, which are very also interesting, which Mr. Mbeki is raising, in terms of what was happening and so on. But from the board of Edifund, until this board was removed. I just want to be told, because you see sometimes things are shifted to the committee. When did the board come with a report which said, in fact, you don't even to report to the committee, because disciplinary measures are not part of the issue that you need a mandate or a permission from the committee. Those are issues that go to the annual report on the financials and other things, how did you deal with the disciplinary measures. But you see, at one point I was misquoted and I was told that I'm disrespectful because I was saying the board is a crybaby without doing anything but complaining. But no one is interfering with them. I don't know whether physical there were people when they wanted to take action going to Auckland Park and say, no, you don't take this action. And so I don't know because I was not there. But I'm saying, Chair, there were clear fiduciary duties by the board which were supposed to execute, and they didn't do such. Amongst of the issues, Mr. Mbeki has dealt those matters very well and understanding the internal what is happening. But we didn't need anybody's permission to charge people in terms of all these things which have been said as well. But why people were not charged? We requested from this board an investigation report of all the people who have been involved in that in the SABC. They never provided that report. This board, the former board, didn't provide that report, Chair, because wanted to say which things people are involved at so that we know whether there's a proper system there and decisions are taken to deal with individuals. We didn't receive that report, Chair, until the board was dissolved, Chair. Now, Chair, I'm just raising this thing, Chair, to say I'm not convinced about what you are saying and your commitment. After two terms which you have been there and things have been happening, watching, and not taking action. I'm talking about the fiduciary duties. I don't talk about political interference. Because we deal with disciplinary matters, we don't need to go to somewhere else or to parliament and say, I want to charge this person and so on. It didn't happen. Why? What exactly was the reason? I'll assume, Chair, that the board was having interest itself in terms of accumulating the SABC. Maybe why some of the officials were untouchable. Within the board itself, the interest, business interest in the SABC. That's why they could not take action. That's my assumption. Because why they didn't take action? Why did you have to give a president, Dr. Snugis Vigalara, a final warning in terms of blacklisting people, which was a serious violation of the code and the other thing? Why do you have to do that? And then was fine, Chair. I think, Chair, Mr. Mbeki is not telling us what was the reason of the board not to act. Not only the disbanded one. He has been there from the other one. And if you look at the issues which they were after this group, they all have turned in that board. Not in the new board. The issues are emanating from the old board to the new board. But what is it which Mr. Mbeki is not telling us about the failure of the board? Because they said the board failed in my conclusion, the board failed. But what is it which is not telling us? He must tell us. What is it which the board did? Don't push the blame to other people. What is it which the board didn't do, which they were supposed to do, so that we are not in the same situation we are at? All this thing happened under their nose. The staff was increased. No one is charged. Nothing happened. People were claiming. Claims were doubled and so on. Nothing happened. We have to make notes until other people know we're removed from the employment of the SAPC. Why, Chair? If I can get the understanding why the board was unable to take action against people who have been defrauding and also working against the interests of the SAPC, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, this is a matter, if I was in your shoes, Honorable Kolane, I would agree with you. But I think, colleagues, honorable members of the House, I would want just to correct one thing, maybe. If it came across like I said that there was any political interference, what I was trying to say, during the era that we're working on, there was a political turmoil in the country at large. And it was not easy, really, to do most of the things which were permitted to us by the in terms of PFMA and our fiduciary duties. I did not mean to say that there was a direct interference, particularly by this house, Chairperson. If I came across perhaps having said that, I beg your pardon and apologize profusely. The issue of blacklisting, Chairperson, unfortunately, some members of this house, particularly member Susan Forth and Dean Smart, Susan Forth was also running for this. Those are the issues that were raised consistently, up to the point where we agreed to say that this matter has been put to an absolute closure. And I remember very well, Chairperson, when you said you even suppressed some members of the House at some stage when they wanted you to raise this, to say this matter has been dealt with so many times and it has been closed. Honourable Colonel, indeed, in terms of our editorial policy and our code of conduct, I mean, it is unacceptable to block access to the airways for anyone in the country. The reason why, before 1994, all progressive organizations converged in Holland under the auspices of the Jabulani Freedom of the Airways was precisely to make sure that we open the airways to all. Subsequently, the apartheid government at the same time realized that they have used particularly the media as a tool to feed the public with poisonous substance in terms of promoting the supremacy and all related stuff, propaganda machinery. So when it was actually nearing the time that we were going to go to the 1994 election, they also had a concurrent process, which was called the Falun Commission, to make sure that whoever gets into power should run the SABC in particular, to be a public broadcaster, not to be a state broadcaster, or not to be a machinery that is going to favor anyone. So the issues of for whatever reason, for individuals or opinions, of not allowing people to be in to play in this place, we expressed our concern to say it's not acceptable. The issue is about the merits of what punitive measure we then put. I'm not going to belabor too much into that, Chairperson. The issue of the leak, Chairperson, it was one of those very unfortunate situations, really. And it was a document which was written by the former Chairperson, who was interacting quite intimately with management. Because we do not interact intimately with affairs of the organization. She said, I am monitoring these issues and I'm putting them on the table for discussion. That was the context of that. And we then agreed to say that it implicates the GCO, who's also a director and a board member. So we need to put it into the system so that it can actually get discussed properly and the allegations be substantiated, because she made reference to a number of issues. That evening, it leaked. Chairperson, what we did, we have acted on this matter. Because we cannot just sit and relax when something like this happened. We commissioned a forensic investigator to try and find out where this information actually came from. And the newspaper house that published provided that information as a result of this intervention. But it became a very, very difficult exercise, Chairperson, to actually trace it. It then complicated issues going forward. However, there's one thing, Chairperson. In some of the wrong things, there might be some good. Even though we have never got into the substance of that of the memo, most of the issues which were raised were subsequently the issues which we find ourselves in. But treating the leak as a separate issue, I'll say that it was so unfortunate, and the leak did not afford the opportunity for that process to continue in the manner in which it did. The
you are going to, in the interest of time, Chairperson, have an opportunity perhaps to interview one of our former colleagues, Desmond Golding, who is sitting on number of charges. By the way, when we ultimately suspended the GCO, part of the charges which we put before him were the manner in which you say there are lot of investigations, some concluded, some not. Why actions are not taken? The very same question which you're asking to us. That's what we were asking. From, I don't want to be defensive, Chairperson. In an attempt, with all the good intentions of doing a good job, there were times where we have erred. And I cannot say we did a sterling good job. We did not make mistakes in the process. There were some mistakes which were human in nature.
Speakers, Sri, Ndiwe, Sebe, and Langa.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My two questions might have been asked, but I'm not yet convinced that I received the answer that I needed. The first question is in regard to that I went through your CV, Mr. Mbeki. It says you are the member of the ANC, you are the member of the ANC Youth League. And then you are the former board member. So I think you are best placed to clear this cloud, basically from the opposition that usually say there has been a political interference or influence in the SABC. I think you are the person best placed to tell us whether it was there or not. What do you think? Was there any political, in particular from the ANC, let me be straight, when they ask, they don't become straight. I just want to respect from the ANC. Was there any political influence from the ANC? If there was there, and how? The other thing is that based on your presentation and your response to all questions that have been asked, I still ask myself a question that why now, not then? You were talking about turning around strategy of the organization. You also have the plan, the five pillars, all those other things you have mentioned. Why now, not then? Why did you save the SABC when you had a chance by then? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, thanks so much. With regard to the issue of political interference, Chairperson, from where I'm sitting, and it's every time that I interact, particularly with SABC and stakeholders, there's not a single moment where in my involvement doing the work that I do on behalf of SABC that I've ever got any instruction from above to say that I cannot do something. Hence, I even said in my initial response to say the reason for me to step down initially was a conscious decision in the interest of the organization, not from any other interference. The ANC, being a ruling party, has its own program. Whether you are a member of ANC or any other political party, Honorable Jalil, it's very important that when you join the SABC board, you know that you are a representative of the public. You are an extension of Parliament, this House. Therefore, you must be accessible to all, particularly the minority parties and other people who, under ordinary circumstances, would not find access to SABC. Because as board members, we are the extension of this House. We are doing work, ideally, on your behalf. It therefore becomes very important that we remain very impartial and be accessible on the issue of why now, I think to a point I addressed this question shortly, to say that my involvement in the board of SABC, the first term, I focused mainly on the content-related components of the organization. The second term, I was focusing on the business components of the organization. That is why I said in my initial remarks to say, you have here someone who is an all-rounder, who understands what drives the business of SABC from a content point and also from a business point. And most of the issues that I was talking about, Chairperson, were issues that we really tried to do, and I believe that given an opportunity, my plan is very clear, and I'll do them. I think, Chairperson, given that this is perhaps the last hand that you have recognized, I just want to flag out a thing or two in conclusion from my side. There are some... Oh, okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Only one question. If you get appointed to the board as someone who was part of the previous board, what assurance are you giving us that you'll not come or you'll not go through SABC with the past baggage and setting certain scores with, because most of the management are still there. So is there any assurance that you'll give us that you'll not create that problem in the SABC?
Chairperson, this, thanks, Honorable Kizer. This question talks to my personality. I'm a people's person. I'm a Christian. I'm very spiritual. I practice transcendental meditation. I know one thing about life. Life has no formula. You can do anything, but you do not hurt a human soul. When you are given a position of power and authority, you always have to ask yourself and do an introspection to say, why has God put me into this place? There is definitely a purpose, and part of which is to make sure that I become a conveyor belt. I make sure that those people who could not, under ordinary circumstances, access SABC and get to know things about SABC. In addition to that, Chairperson, is that I can open it to yourself that you can even talk to SABC management. I'm one of those very few board members who is very strong when it comes to relationships. If you are a board member in an organization like SABC, there are some basic skills metrics that are required. I'll just mention about four. The understanding of the ICT sector broadly, generally, because you are in a time when the digital migration happening. The understanding of the SABC, the culture within SABC and SABC as a company. In addition to that, Chairperson, the relationships. You need to know that a lot of things, even if you want things to be done, you don't on the basis of the power that you have think that you are going to use your force and what. It is very important to continue to build relationships. And I can attest that majority of SABC employees, if there could be a petition in terms of how many board members from the previous board members they would like to see coming back on the basis of interpersonal skills and relationships, I will come very much on top, Chairperson. I am a very reconciliatory person. I have no revenge. I have no intentions at all. And when I deal with any problem, and if you remember my five pillars, the first one is about systems and processes. You don't play the man, play the ball. Say, this is where the problem is. And before you could actually even put a charge, try to find out, to say, here are the systems. What was your understanding of these systems for you to have acted in the manner in which you have done? Because you might get, and this is one of the things which I normally say, I interact with colleagues at Centec, I interact with colleagues with other parastatals, particularly with the regulator. The regulator will give us quotas and many other components that we have to comply with. And would say that some of these have unintended consequences. So relationships are very important, and I can guarantee Chairperson to say that I'm one of those persons. But in closing from my side, Chairperson, there are things that
But before you close, sir, we need, I just want to get the clear understanding, sir. You see, the question is you are responding, Mr. Mbeki, you are saying you're interpersonal, you are the person who understands, you don't want to hurt souls and so on. And we are sitting with an inflated number of staff. And to reduce staff is one issue which is sensitive. It's bloated, SAPC is bloated in terms of the number of staff. I'm not sure how far that has affected the board, not even you yourself, to take hard decisions about that matter. Because you see, the way you are saying soft person, with heart, you know, and so on and so on, it got the financial implication on the SAPC. There are no sentiment there. It's a matter of fact in terms of how do you operate as a board member. Now, I'm saying, Mr. Mbeki, you see, the problem is that you are saying you are surprised today because you will hear SAPC saying they are delaying commissioning and so on and so on and so on. What did you expect the interim board to do when they come in with the 800 million deficit? They were supposed to close their eyes and pretend that things are normal and continue doing things the way you had been doing them. Closing your eyes, knowing exactly what's the financial situation. But you close your eyes, you just continue. Were you expecting that from the interim board? Not to take a decision in terms of we don't have money to pay. What do? We all of us agree it's a sensitive matter. But what did you expect from the interim? Why are you so surprised knowing that you have left 800 million debt deficit? But you are surprised when the interim board take a decision to say this is how we think temporarily we can deal with the matter. Why are you so surprised? Thanks.
Chairperson, thanks, Mr. Colon, about this question. I said the SABC has a wage bill of about 1.8. And I said, Chairperson, the government has called on all corporates to make sure that we preserve jobs for now. And in terms of the tools that I have, the first point of call for me, Chairperson, if I were to assist in SABC, will not be cutting heads, because we cannot undo the very same program of government of preserving jobs, but is to deal with some of those pertinent aspects where there's excess fat. By way of example, Chairperson, we have a situation that we're trying to stop at SABC, where employees have petrol cards. Now, when we dig into that, you find that there is not a single employee, those that have excess cards, per month that is spending less than 15 million per month. Some are spending up to less than 15,000 per month. Some are spending up to 70,000 rands per month. And these are some of the things that I say you cannot undo the program of government in terms of creating unemployment. But look at some of those aspects where you really can do without this. Reduction of costs without tampering with people. The issue of tampering with people's jobs. I also have a model, Chairperson, to that effect. If we were to go, we use the option or we leave the benefits as they stand, and we try to reduce the employment pool of SAPC to fit the 1.1 instead of the 1.8. It would mean, Chairperson, that in our coffers, we need to have about 240 million to pay those people out, give them handshakes. That is not the best model ever, because we don't have that type of money. But we have some of the monies that are lying hidden on benefits that we can do without. In fact, that are not necessarily. There is in most companies, when your salary is structured, it is structured including benefits, your car allowance, and everything. In SABC, it's different. You get to SABC, SABC enters into an agreement with the company where you're going to buy a car from, and the installment that gets paid into the company is not part of your package. If we look at the restructuring of these things, we can find a lot of things in terms of cost saving exercises, Chairperson, without sharing. I will never support issue of sharing jobs because we'll be undoing the very same objective that we're trying to do.
Thank you, Mr. Mbeki. We've had a long session with you. You said you want the final word.
Yes, sir.
If it can be.
No, it's going to be very brief, Chairperson. Chairperson, one of the issues that I was trying to raise in terms of the value that I'll bring to the organization in addition to institutional memory, and I hope, Honorable Colonel, the issue of retaliation and being reconciliatory in nature without compromising on the principles I've dealt with accordingly. There are some commitments which have been made, which require people with a combination of understanding of finances and the culture of FDC that we have to. This financial crisis that we're talking about, now in 2010, we are going to be involved in the Confederations Cup. There, Chairperson, FDC has made financial commitments of huge amounts up to the region of 600 million. We have to honor those agreements. And some of them include the fact that the agreements which are signed, we're making an assumption that we'll have government guarantees to back that one up. There are no guarantees in place. And Confederations Cup in Angola is just in January. Now, to get out of the current striking action, there have been commitments to say, if the cuts that are actually being done, they will reduce the current exposure of SABC, we're likely to make about 21 million. And there's an ex gratia offer to unions, which helped them to pull out of the wage negotiations in this past June, of 2,000 across the board, which means that it's going to be 14 million that will the new board is going to be liable. That is outside the further negotiations. Other aspects that we have committed on the 2014 Brazil World Cup. These, Chairperson, are some of the intricacies which have been part of the system. I understand. I have a clear plan to assist in terms of helping the organization, helping our country. My appeal, ordinary members of the South, to make myself available goes way beyond my personal interest. We have opportunities sometimes at SABC where intellectuals, professionals, academics often invite people to talk about SABC. There's been a huge vacuum lately where SABC has not actually been explaining itself, participating in the public discourse. I'm one of those very few people, Chairperson, who is a player both in the business world, in civil society, and in the academic sphere. And me coming to the board, Chairperson, will actually reinforce the confidence of SABC to such that some of these key intricacies about SABC could best be explained by somebody who has been part of the process, who is studying them in terms of what are the current trends academically today. That is the offer I'm making to the House, and I think you will be considered favorable. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much for your time. What time is your flight? Have they made all the other arrangements? Thank you very much, then. Can we call in the next candidate, please? Can I just, you know what, we are halfway through the mark. Can I really appeal now to members to be brief and pointed? You know, I don't want to curb the candidate, but I think we've been a little bit too generous. And maybe I must now become a dictator. You must see the harder side of me now. Mr. Golding, please take your seat. sorry that we have kept you waiting. I'm told that you had another meeting arrangement. Have you been able to reschedule? You have. Okay, because there's no way you're going to make it. All right. What I would suggest now, take your call, Felicia, because I know I'm not giving you 5 minutes to breathe or so. What has happened now to all the members? Are they coming? All right, look, we've been sitting the whole morning. Give us another 3 minutes. Just I'll allow them to stretch. Because we haven't had lunch, we've had a working lunch. But we are now going to be tightening up. 3 minutes to stretch. Nikki, you did that already, I saw you. Most of the candidates are coming in for some grueling questions. This is a new committee, and I think the committee wants to show that it can fight. No, I'm just intimidating you. you've got 3 to 5 minutes. Take us through your seating. And you are in the same position as Mr. Mbeki. You're part of a dissolved board. So you'll really have to explain to us why we should return you to office. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The honourable members as well are here today. The Chairperson has given me 3 minutes. In fact, in the foremost, I would like to extend my appreciation and humbleness to have been shortlisted for this particular important institution in our country. Secondly, say that by profession, I'm a banker. I bring in skills and expertise, extensive skills in finance, auditing, the understanding of the financial markets, as well as issues of corporate governance. I do have a good working knowledge of the public broadcaster, given the fact that I was in the board that was dissolved. But I should equally say as well that I think my background, having worked for banks, I've worked, in fact, I've worked as a director for Standard Bank. I've worked as the head of group credit for Investec Bank. I was a senior manager at the Reserve Bank. And I've had a posting at the NM Rothschild, you know, in their London office. So what I'm trying to demonstrate is my deep financial background in this particular regard. And also that even in the dissolved committee, I chaired audit committee and other boards that I've served in. I've always been in finance and audit. So, of course, why do I think that? I think it's important that members that do consider me for this particular board is that I'm among the few individuals who, even in the previous board, was very vocal about things that were not going right, also vocal about problems, endemic problems that were facing SABC. The Honorable Chair will remember that I'm one person as well who said that my very first board meeting, I'm the first person to have raised the alarm bells about the financial governance of the institution, the overexposure of the institution, and I raised serious issues that this particular institution, it's a matter of time before it goes down the cliff. I think in an event that one never contributed in terms of certain processes, systems, and measures, I think the things, in fact, could have been worse. But also the fact that I think the lack of chemistry that was there in the board, given its problems when it was constituted, that's the reason why, in fact, I felt that I think as an honorable individual who would like to see good, I thought that the institution or the good of the country cannot be subdued to my own personal good. That's why I decided, in fact, to resign in that particular case, so that, you know, I could, in fact, humble myself that my own personal interests are far bigger than, the interests of the country are far bigger than mine. So, Chair, I would say that on the back of that, I feel that I think it would be an honor for me that I've been considered by this particular committee, and I will continue to play that activist hands-on role that I've got, and also the understanding of very intricate dimensions that are always necessary, particularly the SABC, given its current financial crisis. You know, strong finance, strong auditing, also strong corporate governance. So briefly, Chair, that is what I mean, my motivation to say that I think I can play that particular crucial role in turning the institution around, instilling also the corporate confidence that is supposed to be there, but more importantly, promoting a value-based organization. So that is my contribution that I will make, Chair, before I could take you through how one could do that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Golding, I haven't got the attendance register of both meetings, but if you can recall your attendance of meetings, because I was in my previous life a member of school boards and the name it, and then there are certain individuals that are never there. Can you tell me out of your heart you attended all the meetings and sort of take actively part in the meetings?
I would say that I've attended about 95% of the board meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Golding. Just in sort of just taking that issue a little further, first question, your feeling about the performance of the board, especially financially. You appeared before this committee and you gave us information about your attempts, but do you not believe that the fact that the SABC is now facing a deficit of $800 million is actually to a certain extent a very negative sort of legacy that is left by the previous board? That's the first question. Second question is, if the committee would argue that they would like to start on a new slate, what would be the benefits of running with some of the former board members and with their expertise? Thirdly, you have been nominated by some institutions, but also by Ms. Jessie Duarte, who is now right in the presidency. You also have a very long history. But that is fine. We were the ruling party. What is of a concern is when some of us, when the nominations for the interim board were made, and some of us mentioned the need to have continuity, there was a serious sensitivity from your side with regards to some of the opposition parties, including COPE, of which I am a member, who said that we would require your skills. Innocently so, because I was hoping that you would regard yourself as an independent board member. But you actually reacted very heavily and submitted a letter distancing yourself. Now, how should South Africa trust you as a board member, that you would service all sectors of society and not only the narrow interests of the organization with which you have had a very long history. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. The legacy issue. I in fact, do not think that the legacy that, in fact, one would have left is a legacy where the institution was in financial doldrums. Another member, Killen, would know that financial commitments in bigger institutions have got what is called a lag period of about 18 months to 2 years. That is normally what happens with these big expenditures. So that's why, in fact, when I first took the financial statement of SABC in 2008, I looked at the steady revenue and the upswing in terms of the costs. And I looked also in the cash flow statements and the balance sheet. You would see there that there was what is called forward commitments or deferred payments that would have hurt the institution so bad That's why I made a declaration that this institution is, in fact, bankrupt. It was on the basis of that particular, you know, forecasted income and expenditure to say any institution that does this forward commitment in this particular way, there is no way that come the end of the financial year, it will actually be in a positive financial state. So what I'm saying is that that particular foresight was there, you know, from the outset. And I think the good thing is that one was vindicated. And I think that is one positive legacy that one could actually say has left there. And coming in as well, I would say that I could in fact indicate to this particular committee that the interim board, of course, have asked me, you know, informally to assist them with regard to issues of audit and so on.